You ready?
Ready?
Ready? Ready? Watch out, Frank!
Following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we talk nothing but sports. For the duration of the show, I am your host, Steve Kent. I am joined alongside me, as always, by Lou. And we have a lot of stuff to cover tonight. But first off, I want to give a brief reminder to anybody who may follow the Missy AE podcast. Our schedule for the upcoming week, this upcoming Thursday night, we will be doing the Survivor 43 recap show. So if you're a fan of Survivor, be sure to tune into that because Jim Early and the gang are going to break down pretty much everything that has taken place in this upcoming week of Survivor. Then On Friday night, we will have the finale edition of the Big Brother 24 recap podcast, where we will discuss the finale, which is set to take place tomorrow night on CBS. And we will discuss basically not just the finale, but the season as a whole. And then, of course, next Saturday night, we will be back here for the Sports Whispers Weekly podcast. But, Lou, we have a lot to cover because there's just when we thought that there was going to be a little bit of a lull in the news, all of a sudden it almost seemed like everything piled up upon each other one by one this week. And obviously, I mean, we got number 700 for Albert Pujols to discuss. We got Aaron Judge's chase of Roger Maris' record to discuss. We also have Canelo versus Triple G, part three, that we have to talk about as well. But I figure we should probably get started with perhaps the biggest story that has come out in sports recently, and that is surrounding the Boston Celtics and their head coach Ime Udoka. Now, we did talk about this earlier today, Lou, off the air here on your other show. We talked about this in particular, but what happened is basically Shams Charania reported that Celtics coach Ime Udoka's pending suspension, which he has officially been suspended for a full year as of now, and it was due to an improper, intimate, and consensual relationship with a female member of the team's staff, which is considered to be a violation of the team's code of conduct. And Adrian Wojnarowski added that the Celtics may be prepared to suspend him for the upcoming season, which they already did. Although for now, they had said that his job was secure. However, there have been some developments over the last day or two that kind of makes you wonder, maybe perhaps Ime Udoka the head coach of the Boston Celtics much longer. Yeah. And Lou, I know obviously you've been following this. What's your take on, first off, the fact that, you know, this is a guy who was basically given the best, you know, one of the best coaching opportunities you could ask for, coaching a young team like the Celtics. With such talented players, and he just took them to the NBA Finals this year. And now all of a sudden, it's like he just absolutely has thrown away this chance to really make something here.
Well, he did make something. He just made into a bigger mess because he is an idiot for getting it on with one of his female staff members. Yeah, brilliant move on your part, stupid. I think he got off too easy, though. Only a year suspension. I say that he should be out permanently.
And well, not even come back. It's a year suspension. I have a feeling from listening to Boston radio this week, and I kind of agree with what one of their callers had said. They basically said that they likely only suspended Ime for a year because they want to be able to retain the rights to Ime Udoka, so that if they were to have fired him, there would be the chance that some other team would potentially pick him up right away. Like maybe some other team doesn't really care about the fact that he had a relationship or a hookup with a member of the Celtics team staff, and they would decide, you know what, he's still a good coach, so we're going to pick him up anyways, even though he has that baggage.
Oh, if you only knew.
So I have a feeling that's probably why they only decided to just suspend him for the time being. And from all indications, according to team owner Wick Grosbeck, at a press conference that they held yesterday, Wick basically said that there is a significant monetary penalty that Ime is suffering here. So it sounds like he may be partially paid during his suspension, but there's basically considering the contract that he had signed when he first got hired by the Celtics, it sounds like there is a significant reduction in pay for him as a result of this.
Exactly. As there should be.
And, oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I may be a Celtics fan, but come on, there's, you know, you're an NBA coach. You have a smoking hot fiance in Nia Long. What the hell are you doing hooking up with a female staff member on the team? And in particular,
you mean Nia Long,
in particular, too, apparently this staff member makes all of his with him being basically she was his travel agent. So,
I see.
She helped make all the travel arrangements for him and his wife also sometimes. It says, according to TMZ Sports, the job sometimes included organizing travel for his fiance, Nia Long. And so basically one of the staffer's duties included planning Udoka's team-related travel, and they were told that she was also involved in booking travel for Nia to come to Boston or to different road games. And also, what's most upsetting for Nia is, number one, just a little over 2 weeks ago, she had just moved to Boston to be permanent, to live permanently with Ime. And what's most upsetting, perhaps, for her in this is that the female staff member also had a hand in helping Nia move to Boston permanently.
I see.
And, you know, this apparently is so big of a scandal that it even got former head coach Brad Stevens, who is now the team president, to pretty much, I mean, he never swears. Like, he literally never swears when talking to the media. And he started until now, he started talking about all of the, as he said it, bullshit media, bullshit rampant rumors on Twitter.
Right.
And he was very emotional during this press conference, saying that the scandal had been particularly upsetting for all of their female employees. Due to the speculation about who had the affair with Udoka. And the reason why he lashed out at Twitter is because multiple female employees were basically floating around on Twitter. Like the Twitter people were putting out different names and pictures of female employees on the Celtics staff, and were basically alleging that they were the ones who Ime had hooked up with. And apparently it's caused a lot of harassment and a lot of turmoil to those specific employees in the past couple of days because of this, because their names basically been getting dragged through the mud.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's been speculation as to who exactly leaked this. Was it the Celtics? Was it Ime? Was it one of the staff members that leaked this? The Celtics have flat out denied. That's the first thing they said in their press conference, was that it wasn't leaked out by them. So whoever did it, it wasn't knowingly done by one of the Celtics front office members. So that's led to speculation that maybe Ime Udoka tried to get out in front of this and basically throw the staff members underneath the bus, trying to lessen the blow that would come onto him as a result of this. But, you know, needless to say, Lou, this is for a team that had just made the NBA Finals and is one of the front runners to win the title this year, according to Vegas, this is the last thing that they needed to come up here.
Yes.
So what effect, Lou, do you think this might have with Ime Udoka? We know how he coaches. We know the types of decisions that he makes during games. How big of an effect, or how much of an effect, will this have on the upcoming season?
Oh, it's going to have a big effect. I think it's going to be a big distraction on the Celtics this season, knowing what took place just recently. I think Udoka is going to be up in Schitt's Creek, and the team is going to suffer. So this is only the beginning of what's to come for the Celtics and Udoka.
Right. Yeah, and it's definitely going to be a distraction. And the one thing too about this is there's no literally they set up a press conference, and yet they said we can't really tell you guys anything about any of the details, because they said that they hired a law firm back in July after the NBA Finals to investigate this, and they literally just got the results back from said law firm after they had investigated everything that went on. And so basically, like I said on your show earlier today, Lou, that it really seems like this is more, this has turned basically into a lawyer game now, where it's Ime Udoka's lawyers against the Boston Celtics lawyers.
Yes.
And I have a feeling that maybe perhaps Ime may not be on the Celtics for much longer. I mean, yeah, he's probably going, he's going to stay suspended, but I think we have seen Ime coach his last game as the head coach of the Boston Celtics, and maybe perhaps as a head coach period. The NBA.
But the question is the decline.
As according to an agent, and this is coming from one of the established sites out there, according to Ethan Strauss of the House of Strauss, he has indicated that Udoka's recent actions that led to his suspension will likely doom his future coaching prospects in the league. That according to an agent friend of his, the agent basically told him about Udoka's head coaching process, and I quote, "He's done." And then he said, "My guy's not the only one saying it. This is how many NBA insiders now see the situation and have seen it since Thursday, really. While nobody can completely predict the future, it is a widespread interpretation of present events." Now, what's weird about this whole thing is originally the organization had been under the impression that the relationship between Udoka and the female staffer was consensual from both sides. But then the staffer recently accused Udoka supposedly of making unwanted comments towards her, supposedly. And according to Wick Grosbeck, during the press conference, owner Wick Grosbeck did say that there were multiple violations of their conduct policy that were, that Udoka had committed. So it sounds to me, Lou, it's not just a one-time thing. It's a multiple incident situation that we're dealing with here. So with that being said, I find it very hard to believe that Udoka will be staying around much longer. I think what they're probably doing right now is they're probably trying to come to a conclusion to where first off, the Celtics are probably trying to make it so that they don't have to pay Udoka the remainder of his contract, and they can somehow get out of his contract, and, you know, they can move forward with finding a potential permanent head coach. I mean, I know there's head coaches that are on the market. Frank Vogel's on the market. Quinn Snyder's on the market. Boston could be a very attractive destination for head coaching for potential head coaches, wouldn't you think?
Exactly.
So the assistant coaches on Boston Celtics are Damon Stoudemire, Ben Sullivan, Joe Mazzulla, Aaron Miles, and Tony Dobbins. And they decided to give the interim head coach title to Joe Mazzulla, who was originally a member of Brad Stevens' team, Brad Stevens' coaching staff. And I know that, you know, there's a past that Mazzulla has had. In particular, where I forget what it was. There was some sort of he had some sort of a domestic violence incident or something that ended up taking place. Or no, he was arrested for domestic battery at a bar while he was in college, while he was playing in college. And Brad, you know, there were people who were wondering, okay, how's it going to look from Boston's end if they go from Ime Udoka, who is a cheater, to a guy who was arrested for domestic battery? And Stevens did say that he did vet originally. He vetted him thoroughly before he even added him as an assistant to his coaching staff back when he was the head coach of the Boston Celtics. And he said that Mazzulla had passed with flying colors, basically, to meet all the qualifications, both not just basketball-wise, but also as his character as a person. And he was then hired as one of the assistant coaches. So the fact that they brought in Mazzulla as the interim head coach, to me, Lou, I think this is a good idea because he already has a bit of knowledge of the Boston Celtics players. I mean, he's Tatum, Brown, Smart, all of the veterans on that team have worked with him since the 2019 season. So it's not like they're going to be working with, say, Damon Stoudemire or something, who literally just joined the team last year. However, this is Mazzulla's first coaching gig in the NBA as a head coach. He was previously a head coach at Fairmont State for 2 years, from 2017 to 2019, which is Division II, I think, in NCAA. So, and I mean, he had a pretty good record there, but Fairmont State isn't really, you know, they're in the Mountain East Conference. They're not really a big basketball, you know, college.
That conference, I don't take down ball that seriously.
Yeah, but
nobody does.
Perhaps, you know, the big reason why Ime Udoka was even hired from the beginning is because the players wanted him to be hired. The players advocated for him to be hired. Joe Mazzulla, he originally, this past offseason, he was one of the finalists for the Utah Jazz job before it ended up going to another, person. So, you know, it's not like there haven't been teams that have been looking at potentially hiring him. So I think this could be a good thing for Boston. Obviously, we're going to have to see, you know, what style of coaching he brings, whether he's going to continue Ime's system or if he's going to implement a new system of his own. But the players were apparently made aware of the stuff going on with Ime shortly before it was officially announced, like a couple of days before it was officially announced. And, yeah, this is basically the next era, I guess you could say, in the Boston Celtics. And I mean, there's one thing, Lou, that I just do not understand. And Stephen A. Smith could not shut his mouth during this whole thing.
What a shock! Why is he always rat? I don't get it. Why? Sorry about that, but you get the idea.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, Lou. He immediately brought race into the equation here. Saying that this wouldn't be an issue if the coach was white. This wouldn't be an issue, because as he said, there are plenty of white folks in sports, including those in leadership positions that are doing their thing, basically.
I don't know how you still put up with them.
Yeah, you know, it made ESPN look very bad in this whole thing. It's almost as if he made ESPN look like they're spinning a narrative that Ime Udoka is the one under attack here.
Mm.
And actually, the exact quote is, there's plenty of white folks out there doing their thing. I don't see the information out about them. That's the exact quote that was said by Stephen A. Smith.
I don't know how Kellerman and Molly put up with the two. Or are they just staying silent? Like, I'm not going to love this.
He got into a fight, actually, with Malika Andrews as well, involving this whole thing. And Malika Andrews ended up calling in to the show to basically have at it on First Take about the Ime Udoka scandal. And she basically warned him to stop pointing fingers, that this whole thing isn't about pointing fingers. Actually, let me find the exact quote that Stephen A. Smith here. He said, it said in the numerous news reports that it was a consensual relationship and violated an organizational policy. So only he is in violation of a company policy. The woman who elected to have a consensual relationship with him is not in violation. He gets to get mentioned and put on Front Street. We don't know who she is. And
say what?
So basically, Stephen A. Smith with this whole thing is placing the blame for the rampant and incorrect speculation on the woman involved in the scenario, who may have even been wronged by Udoka himself or herself. And Malika Andrews basically called in and said, with all due respect, this is not about pointing the finger. Stop. What became apparent to me in this press conference is that we do not have all the information here. And it was frustrating to me that the Celtics declined to elaborate or give more specifics about what exactly the rule breaking was that led up to this point. We are not here, Stephen A., to blame women. That is not why we are here. Now, I don't know about you, Lou, but to me, this doesn't seem like – I mean, first off, all the blame should be put on Ime Udoka. All the blame should be put on the coach It should be put on the coach regardless of if the coach is white, the coach is black, the coach is any race whatsoever. If the coach is the one that's causing all these problems, he should be the one that is immediately put under fire here.
Right.
Let me bring in Alex. Alex, welcome to the show. We are discussing the Ime Udoka scandal, which I'm sure you probably have heard about.
Oh, yeah. Thankfully, I wasn't involved in that one. Hey, Lou, my other favorite host. Lou, sorry, man. I still have to work for a couple more weeks, so I'm sorry I missed your show, but I heard it was a good show this afternoon. What's that?
He was on. Steve was actually on it, and that was good, man.
No, I always got your best things in mind, man. I'm sorry I was tied up with work before, but happy to jump on tonight, man.
Good.
It's amazing. I mean, I have to assume I'm not a mind reader, but I don't know all the answers in the world. But
you're not.
For them to proactively get out in front of it, it had to be really pretty brutal. I don't know. I'm kind of mind boggled because I've never heard of there has to be something more to the story. Like, we're going to suspend the guy for a year for cheating on his wife with a staffer. That doesn't happen on Wall Street or in a public school system. So why are the Celtics suspending this guy for a year suddenly? Was there something illegal about it? I don't know one-tenth of what's going on because I don't understand that.
Right. So here's the thing. Right. Supposedly, the relationship was supposedly consensual at first. The organization was under the assumption they were under the understanding, I should say, that the relationship was consensual. Female staff member then said that she accused Ime of making inappropriate remarks or something along those lines towards her.
The woman he was tangled up with, or another staffer?
Yes. Yeah. The woman that he was tangled up with. No, the same woman.
Then it was shifting into possible workplace harassment, sexual harassment.
Possibly.
Yeah. I thought he was getting destroyed because of cheating on his wife with a staffer. As bad as that is, there's nothing you really shouldn't be able to suspend someone. So, yeah, that proves what I was. That gives me the info I was looking for. I honestly didn't read or find out too much about it since I jumped on your guys' show. So now it makes more sense.
Right. However, there is more about it, though. There's rumors flying around. One in particular says there might be a second woman that is involved, and that woman might actually have gotten pregnant by Udoka.
I was literally like, what is going on here? I thought he assaulted someone on the staff, male or female, or soul, or you know what I mean? That's out of left field. I've never encountered that as a sports fan in 43 years of watching, or not, you know, many years watching sports. I've never had seen a coach suspended by a team without a charge, you know what I mean? Without anything legal coming up. That was pretty.
Exactly.
It's groundbreaking.
Exactly. And, you know,
what would the league would have done, because Massachusetts police wouldn't have done anything. I mean, it's still strange to me. Unless he tried to strangle someone or pulled a Kareem Hunt or a Michael Vick. To suspend him for a year, I mean, what would be the worst thing that could happen if Boston fans found out or if David Silver found out? What would they – they're not going to do anything huge to the Celtics. Yeah. It's a PR move, I guess.
Yeah, it's basically, from what it sounds like, it's a PR move. But here's the thing about it, though, is that according to Whit Grosbeck, who is the Celtics owner, there's not really much that they can say about the investigation because lawyers are involved now. So it's basically, it sounds like it's Ime Udoka's lawyers against the Boston Celtics lawyers. And there is speculation that, yeah, he is suspended, but the reason why he's suspended is because they don't want to flat out fire him, because in doing so, that could mean that he could potentially jump immediately from them to another team, and a lawsuit too, that too.
Yeah,
but
I agree with
they
you.
Don't
That's
want him jumping.
With me. If you can't, if someone cheats on someone, you can't fire someone for that, especially on such a grand stage as an NBA job. I mean, we all know that. Because you could easily hire a dream team of attorneys and fry their ass in court. So they got to tread lightly. I guess the owner knew what he was doing. Obviously, a move like that, I knew there was something bad. You know what I mean? The owner wouldn't publicly speak out and justify it. So I knew there was something big coming up. I just didn't know what it was. But now you're giving me some clarity to it.
Yeah. And on top of all this too, his fiance Nia Long, she apparently did not know about this until, like, literally maybe the day before Ime knew that it was going to come out. Ime told her that it was going to come out, and she was absolutely blind. I mean, she had with Ime 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's awful.
And
from all indications, she's a really lovely woman, too. Professionally, family-wise, and obviously, the whole nine yards, she's a good woman. So it's terrible for it to happen.
That's hard to find.
It's definitely not a Kardashian trashy situation. She's a classy person, so that's awful. For her to find out through the media, all too often it happens, but now, as you guys know, we live in the digital age. We find out stuff overnight, and relatives or players' wives, or sometimes players don't even find out until they're getting reported on.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too. Stephen A. Smith immediately went on the race subject of all this, basically insinuating that if he was white, that he wouldn't have been suspended, because white people in sports apparently are doing this all the time. And
I don't know if he's off the mark on that one. I know it's a little bit volatile and a little bit controversial. So obviously, when Stephen A. speaks up, you're like, take it with a grain of salt. He's got an angle, but I don't know how incorrect he is. Quinn Snyder, the ex-Jazz coach.
Yeah,
it's random, but it actually speaks exactly to what you just said about Stephen A. Smith. I didn't even know he was notorious at University of Mizzou, coaching Missouri basketball before he became the head coach of the Utah Jazz, for not only banging, for having relations with 18, 19-year-old cheerleaders, not just staff. I would think it would be a little less disturbing or a little less of a red flag, 30-year-old compared to an 18-year-old. A little bit worse. And he was doing some extracurricular activities that, kind of that white powder thing. Quinn Snyder was a big he liked to do the Bolivian Coke marching powder up his nose with players and with co-eds, with freshmen and sophomores on campus. And they quietly ushered him off of campus, and he landed with the Jazz. So, it is a little you can't compare this just with one case, but, hey, I literally was randomly reading about that, I swear to God, 2 days before this Iduka stuff came up. Like, someone talked about it on some Facebook thing, and I go, Quinn Snyder, I always used to watch that guy. You guys noticed that, right? He always looked like he was fried. He looked like he hadn't slept in 5 days, and he had eyes taken out of his head. We've met someone or noticed someone or watched TV and noticed someone who's doing that stuff up the nose. Quinn Snyder, he nails it to a T. I had never – and then I started researching it. And I'm like, remember the old Deadspin? They were like the cool guys on the block before Barstool Sports.
Yeah,
right.
Deadspin has a bunch of articles on him. People would call in and write emails and articles about him. Like, hey, I'm on campus. Quinn Snyder is at my frat party. He's doing that stuff upstairs, and he's with a bunch of girls and players. And, but hey, swept under the rug. He didn't get to bastardize because he landed a bigger job with more money in, of all places, in Mormonville out in Salt Lake City. So can't make sense of that. But different skin tone of Udoka. So I wouldn't say Stephen Smith is totally out of bounds.
Yeah, but, I mean, here's the thing. Regardless of race, though.
I hate doing that
because
it shouldn't be about that. It couldn't be about that.
Yeah, because if a coach does something wrong, whether they're white, they're black, Asian,
I don't care if
Hispanic,
they're Asian or Puerto Rican,
whatever.
No.
Right.
Yeah. If they do it wrong, or if they do something wrong, like, or I shouldn't say wrong, because I mean it's Ime's decision to do whatever he's doing.
Yes.
But if it's his decision, the blame should be put on him. Don't be saying, oh, this is this is on the Celtics because this is this is all about race, and we know that Boston hates blacks, even though I don't know, they had they treated Doc Rivers like he was a king. They treated Doc Rivers like he was a king.
That's a tired story. You think any of the, I mean, most of the front office and most of the fans weren't around when racism was rampant. And sure, they had that stigma. But they've had some glorious teams. Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett. I mean, Bill Russell. Let's go back to the old school.
Sure.
Yeah, there were undertones of racism. I mean, that's what it is. There were undertones of racism in most parts of the country. So, I really hate that stigma. I mean, look at Big Poppy they just traded for Tommy Pham.
Exactly.
Racist. I think it's an undertone of the past, so it's very unfair to label them. But it's stigmas like that, they smell, the smell lingers for decades, I guess.
Yeah, and it's
unfortunate. I don't think of Boston. If I think of racism, I look at certain people down south, and I think things are improving on a sports landscape. I'm not going to touch politics, but I think Boston is now a racist place. I don't agree with that, as Boston being labeled as that.
I know. I mean, it's unfortunate that there have been some unfortunate incidents that have happened sporadically over the past couple of years. Like I know for Boston, they had Boston fans chanting racial slurs at, I think it was Adam Jones from the Baltimore
Orioles.
Yeah, I
heard about that.
In the Pac-Man?
I don't think there was a group chant though per se. I think it was like three or four hammered idiots.
That's what it was.
If you're in a stadium, are you suddenly a racist because you were two sections down with your wife, and then now the whole section's a racist? Like, bullshit for the rest of people that aren't racist. But it's a volatile.
Yeah.
It's always going to be a volatile topic. So it's very
touchy.
Yeah,
it always will be.
That'll never change.
So now that Udoka is suspended, they have put in Joe Mazzulla, who was an assistant coach not just under Udoka, but also under Brad Stevens. Joe Mazzulla has been named the interim head coach as basically his first head coaching gig in the NBA after being an assistant for 3 to 4 years with Boston. What do you think, Alex, about the Celtics now moving forward? I mean, they were considered to be one of the front runners to potentially win the title this year.
Absolutely. And you know me, I'm a huge, I can't lie and say I'm huge into college football. I know what I know, and I know NBA basketball, and I respect the Celtics a lot. And not before we even charge forward and focus on what you just asked about, the fact that the Time Lord is out, I just read the news today. Time Lord's one of their biggest key pieces is out for, I think, about two or 3 months. And then obviously before he even stepped onto the hardwood, Gallinari was like a dream that never happened. He's out for the year. So they're getting some stuff going on right now, on and off the court. I don't know enough about it. I can only presume that the brass, the ownership there is putting the right guy in charge. So in a thing like this, you don't want to suddenly bring in a Chuck Daly or a Pat, you don't want to bring in some random guy from another team or from retirement. So they're keeping it close to home. So this guy, I take it as a long time, what was he, an assistant coach? The players don't.
Yeah, he was a first time assistant coach in 2019 when Brad Stevens brought him in. Back when Brad Stevens was still the coach.
Yeah, because obviously Adoka didn't leave because he wanted to. So they have to, you don't want to totally shake everything up because everyone's already shook up. So you want to kind of make the transition to someone else as seamless and as smooth and insignificant as possible. So you want the players to go to practice the first day with someone they know because they were damn close to that championship. There's no rebuild in Beantown. There's no rebuild in Boston. So it's like you got to keep, the captain of the ship is off the ship for a year. You have to put the second in command right there leading the way.
Right.
There's no need to hit the panic button. There's no need to hit the panic button. I'm sorry. I'm done.
No, yet. So what are your thoughts for this year's team with Mazzulla now at the helm? Do you think that he may try to keep Ime's system in place with so that maybe perhaps there's a lot of familiarity for the players, or do you think he might try to institute his own system?
No, I think two things that support the fact that he's going to keep the truck running on the same route is that they were very close, so it's already a system that works, and he was internal, so he's learned under Adoka. And lastly, and maybe most importantly, he's probably going to be under I don't think Adoka's going to actually be able to come back from this, maybe, but
no,
he got handpicked for a reason, so he's not going to come in with some, Steve Kerr, some fast break offense suddenly. I think everything's going to be status quo from a strategic X's and O's standpoint. Otherwise, they would have brought in someone else. I think the ownership probably wants the closest thing to Adoka as possible, so they pick the next guy up.
Right.
Internally.
Yeah.
Again,
if
they were a 500 team, or if Adoka passed away, there's so much uncertainty. They just want to kind of keep things moving forward because they were so damn close.
Right. And from what I read as well is that according to a NBA agent who is in touch with a lot of the workarounds in the NBA, he's basically said that there's no way that Ime Udoka will be able to coach ever again in the NBA. That's the sentiment amongst fellow NBA teams.
And you're a boss. Sorry, Steve, go for it.
Well, I was just gonna finish by saying that the sentiment is that Ime basically screwed himself with this. Mm-hmm. With this scandal, and that there's no way that no team is going to want to pick him up now with that baggage.
So I'd give it a few years. He didn't get arrested. He didn't, I even hate using the word, but he didn't, RAPE. It was very questionable, but he didn't drive drunk and injure a kid. There's, I'm not minimizing it, but there is a list of things that are much, much worse than this. If you gave me a crystal ball or $50 on the table, I'd bet, within a couple of years, he might do look at John Lucas, or there's players who have failed drug tests, or Kareem Hunt, there's different situations. So as long as it's not going to get much worse than what you've just shared the last 20 minutes, I think in a couple of years, he's an assistant coach, and then maybe in 5 years, he could be a head coach again. I don't know how this blackballs him and totally eliminates him from future consideration. I mean, do you think it's that brazen, that horrendous? Bad. It's not like holy shit.
You think so, Lou?
Yeah. I don't know if anybody. Do you think anybody would pick him up?
And Michael Vick came back and played for the Eagles a year later. After that sounded a lot worse. If I had two choices, this one is not as bad as Michael Vick. I don't know.
And as far as the Robert Williams news goes, this is the second botched diagnosis that the Celtics have given this offseason. The first one was Danilo Gallinari, where originally they said that the ACL was intact. And then all of a sudden they said, oh, wait, no, the ACL isn't intact, and he has to undergo surgery and will be out for the entire year. Originally, they said, okay, Robert Williams is going to undergo a procedure. He'll be out for 4 to 6 weeks. Now, all of a sudden, it's jumped to 8 to 12 weeks because they are going to remove loose bodies in his knee as well as address the swelling in his knee. And now he will be expected to return to basketball activities in anywhere from 8 to 12 weeks, which to me...
Wow.
That's a very considerable loss for Boston.
And not only that, that's the best. I'm sorry. You know more about the Celtics than me. From a blind man can see, he's the most important overall from a franchise standpoint. Not trying to win a game tomorrow, but long term, Al Horford and Gallinari, who never even played, now it's just you went from Time Lord and then Gallinari. I'd probably put him almost equal to Horford. I like Gallinari a lot. I mean, at least as a sixth or seventh man, that's huge. And now you're just left with Horford. So, yeah, that's a huge hit. They've been hit twice there on the court and then a massive controversy off the court. And they were right there. That goes to show. I mean, look at the Bengals at 0-2. When you get to that center stage, the grand moment, like, it's very hard to get back.
Right.
Everyone thought the Celtics were going to probably be back. I still love the Celtics. I respect the heck out of them. But, you know, every day-to-day things change. Once you get there, you got to capitalize. I thought they were going to win the championship, too. And now it's not. Their roster's not as good. And they have a lot of controversy. And they have a brand-new head coach. So it's like it's not going to get easier next year.
And now, because of this, that means that, well, first off, Al Horford was already starting to begin with. He's the starting power forward. But now Grant Williams is going to be probably the starting center unless they move Horford to center and they put Williams at the four instead of Horford.
They can go back to what wasn't working and have Tatum at the four, but they were better when they were bigger. As you know,
no, they won't do that.
They were better with Tatum at the three and Brown at the two.
Here's my thinking, though.
Yeah, what's up? What do you think?
My thinking is one of the centers that really excelled in the summer league this year. Now, granted, this is the summer league. This isn't the main NBA, but in the summer league. There was a center by the name of Mifiondu Cabangele, who originally was from the Clippers, but then he became part of the Boston Celtics Summer League team. He excelled big time, posting, I think he averaged a double-double in the Summer League this summer. This may potentially, because of the fact that the Celtics have not addressed the big man situation with the Robert Williams and Danilo Gallinari news, that means their depth is now Al Horford, followed by Grant Williams, who both are going to be in the starting lineup probably. This means that either A, they're going to have to go small, or B, they're going to have to put in Luke Kornet, which, let's face it, I don't think Kornet is going to be seeing meaningful minutes.
The Knicks were starved for big help before Mitchell Robinson, and Kornet was cut by the Knicks. So let's put that pipe dream to rest.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The other option is to put in Cabangele, who has played in 39 games. I believe he played in 39 games last year. I could be wrong, but I think it was 39 games. Wait, hang on. Yeah, 39 games between the Cavaliers and the Clippers.
I know where I'm going to go with this, a way to fix their big man deficiency, their void. How to fill the void? they have a new point guard who can actually shoot threes and doesn't dribble out of control sometimes. Malcolm Brogdon. Start him. Hey, guess who can be on the block? Trade him. Trade him for a big. Marcus Smart.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a big man by midnight tonight if you offered Marcus Smart out in the market. You can get a big man tonight.
I could definitely
GMs would call him right now if they said they quietly said Marcus Smart's available. They've been trying to get him.
My problem with that though is I don't think the Celtics want to trade him because of the fact that he's seen by many as the heart and soul of this Celtics team, and
except
I think the fear
breakup.
Is yeah. I think the fear is that if they trade him, that may make Brown and Tatum be like, what the fuck are we doing here? And
it also might be
maybe
a ripple
perhaps,
effect. He rubs off. He leads the way. He's infectious. You know that. I mean,
yeah.
It's not just his stat line, 12 points a game, 4 assists, turnovers. Oh, my God, the kind of novice amateur fans. Oh, he turned it up. Dude, that guy – is such a positive impact. His ripple effect, he makes Brown and Tatum and everyone better and tougher defenders. So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot bigger than just a stat line. But if you gave him up, you can get a Miles Turner tonight. Maybe not the Pacers because they have Haliburton, but you get my point. You can get a really good big man for him. Not the Pacers. They're already loaded with the guards. But you can get someone.
And also, you know, another thing too is that I think it was Danny Ainge who didn't like Turner, but Brad Stevens did. So that could potentially be an option.
Danny Ainge like anybody.
He's a big, big talent guy that just every year, this is going to be the year. And then he plays 35 games, doesn't really play a lot of defense. Oh, next year he's going to be great. And then he's always on the block.
Yeah.
And he's not. I don't think the Pacers are in love with him. I mean, I wouldn't move mountains to get a Miles Turner.
No.
He's a good dude, man. But potential is the most dangerous word in sports. And that guy's been living off the word potential for like 5 years. Next thing you know, he's going to be 30. When's this year going to be the year for that guy? I mean,
Lou, what are your thoughts on this, Lou? Where do you think the Celtics go here with the big issue, with the issue with the big men, now that they are in desperate need of depth? Do you think that they might go with what Alex is suggesting, that maybe perhaps they may look at Marcus Smart as being expendable now with Malcolm Brogdon being brought in?
I think probably that would be the wise move right there. I mean, I see this with I can't picture him being with the Celtics. You know, I was just thinking that. So Steve might have something there. I mean, Alex might have something there.
Yeah, it's.
I was just thinking the same thing. Well, I just don't think that. So the one thing the Pacers have going for them is they have who's the really good shooting guard they got last year in the draft? Just a smart, good player, like a B-plus player, not a superstar.
Right.
They have him paired with Haliburton. Yeah. The Pacers have a really good young backcourt. What the heck is his name? Steve, are you privy to that? Can you look up real quick the Pacers? Shooting guard. He was like an old, he's like a 22-year, four-year player, 22-year-old.
Was
and he came in right away and scored like 13 a game.
Wait a minute. No, this was this year. Hang on. Let me look. Yeah,
and
they moved
Buddy Hield. They moved Buddy Hield and split him right into the starting lineup. So Haliburton is starting with that guy. They're both
Let me look at last year's.
They're both tall, kind
Duarte?
Of gangly. What's that?
Was it Duarte?
Yeah.
Chris Duarte.
Duarte and Haliburton. That's a nice. They're both like 6'5". And they're like smart, kind of like rangy. That's a good backcourt. I don't think they're bringing in Marcus Smart. Maybe they could. I don't know. Because they just moved Sabonis. So now if they move Turner, they probably need a big back.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the best trade partner. But, I mean, the Celtics could use Turner. What would the – maybe the Pacers would want Grant Williams.
Great Turner.
I don't think the Pacers want a guard back. The Pacers could use a big man who's not a big man, like a Grant Williams.
And here's the thing: if they trade for Turner, there's no way in hell they're giving them a big man back in return. Because
Give him Grant Williams.
What I'm
then
saying,
at least
though,
you have a 5 and a 4. You have Horford and Turner.
What I'm saying though is why trade for depth? Well, let's face it, Turner is not going to be depth. Turner would be the starting center, and then Williams would go back to being depth. But why would you trade
from
for
your
Turner?
Starting, well, Steve, your starting lineup would be better, and it would be bigger. I don't think Grant Williams is a starter. I mean, he's like 6'5", 6'6", 250, and he's not Charles Barkley. I don't think a championship team starts Grant Williams.
What I'm saying is, though, if you get Turner for Williams, you're still in the same position where you were. I mean, yeah, your starting lineup has improved, but now you have no depth at the big position.
Yes, yeah. And you probably have to move a draft pick, and then you have, like you said, you probably have to. I mean, Grant Williams is a great sixth or seventh man, so you still have to. I don't know. I know it sounds like a kind of a jerk thing to say, but I'd rather have to improve my sixth or seventh man than my starting center. Maybe there's another move though. Let's look at other rosters that have a big man that could use a Marcus Smart. There's a million of. There's got to be 10 teams that would take Marcus Smart this weekend. I mean, there's got to be a big man out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Pacers backup, what is his name? Bigley? He's
Matadze?
He's a Lithuanian or a Yugoslavian guy.
Yeah,
I mean, he's
Matadze.
Goga.
I think it's Goga Matadze.
Kevin Pritchard. I used to like him a lot back in the Blazers when they had, like, Brandon Roy and Aldridge. He's obviously, as you guys know, now he's one of the Pacers. He was, like, salivating and gushing, ooh and eyeing over that guy. And he's been injured a lot. He's like a lighter shade of Miles Turner. Two peas in a pod. They're both like full of potential. And they never do a damn thing. You could probably get him for, obviously you could get him for less than Miles Turner. They didn't lose Time Lord forever. So maybe they move. I don't know. Who's the best? Who's the seventh, eighth man on the Celtics? Who would the Pacers want? You got to give to get.
I mean,
you're going to give up two number ones for a big man?
No, considering Batadze is significantly lower on the value scale, I would say
get your first round pick.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I would actually say you could probably go with like Peyton Pritchard and a second round pick, and that could possibly get it done.
I love Pritchard. Yeah.
So do
sure
I,
Kevin
but
Pritchard,
I think it could possibly get it done, though.
Indiana grassroots, Midwest, they'd like a little Peyton Pritchard out there. I mean, Goga, I wish I could pronounce his name. I'd win a lot of. Bilovich? It could take me 5 years to pronounce his name. He's I think Pritchard's a better ball player than him, but size wins in the NBA. You could probably swap them straight up. Because then Pritchard would slot in as a third guard, a.k.a. sixth or seventh man for the Pacers.
You know what?
The Pacers would do that straight up, one for one. Pritchard for
I just thought about this. There is one person who's trying to make an NBA comeback who is a former Boston Celtic.
Von Arkell.
Aaron Baines.
I'm kidding.
Aaron Baines.
Perfect.
Artest, forget
it. Start him. Do not move Tatum back to playing down low. Keep the wings the same. Keep Brown. Yeah, that's the thing. Despite them losing these big men, they cannot go small again. That was not working. You got to keep Tatum and Brown out of the wings. You have to add someone with Horford. They have to fill that void. Through trade.
I mean, Baines
would be perfect.
Baines has suffered. He suffered a spinal cord injury in the Tokyo Olympics, and he's been making a recovery basically ever since. He just recently played for the Brisbane Bullets. I think it was like either last Sunday or the Sunday before that. But he had 14 points and 6 rebounds in just 13 minutes of playing. So you know, he's making a road to recovery, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, yeah, he's serviceable. And the cool thing, you know, the one good silver lining point of optimism the Celtics can ride into glory right now, ride into the sunset. Either way, Time Lord is not suspended for the year. Time Lord didn't leave. Time Lord didn't break his neck. You know, Time Lord's out for 2 or 3 months. Baines is familiar with the system. He's the crowd favorite. That's a no-brainer. They're working the phones right now. You know, the Celtics
right, yeah.
on his agent.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because he's a familiar fit. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Now, elsewhere throughout the league, the New Orleans Pelicans, they agreed to a contract extension with their star guard, C.J. McCollum. 2 years, about $64 million, which will take him through the 2025-2026 season. So his new deal will basically make his contract 4 years, $133 million, essentially.
Well, ultra talented player.
Yeah, that wraps.
I don't know. I watched him
up
many a time. Yeah, I mean, I'm a massive Blazer fan. And Dame Lillard recruited him to Portland. They're both smaller guys. They're both from small schools.
Yeah.
It was love at first sight for those two. They were going to be the smallest backcourt to ever, you know,
right.
win championship. They're best friends still. It was not working out, so I'm glad they moved him. They should have gotten more for him. They got Josh Hart and a couple other draft picks. They should have gotten more. That's what's done is done. We got to move on. He's not a perennial all-star. I think he looks great and sounds great. He's obviously got a big future career. He's a very smart guy. He's very eloquent. He's a great guy. He takes bad shots. He doesn't pass well. He gets lit on defense. He gets torched. Really talented. So he's a good role player. Well, I would say he's the second or third. What do you guys think? Is he a second guy, a third guy?
No,
he's got a lot of deficiencies in his game, holes in his game.
Yeah.
Right.
Specifically on the Pelicans, I would put Brandon Ingram above him. I would put, when he's healthy, I would put Zion Williamson over him. But
yeah,
still,
he's the third guy there.
You know,
Zion Williamson.
He may be the third guy, but that, you could potentially look at that roster and say, that could be potentially a big three of Ingram, McCollum, and Williamson.
Oh, yeah. Then you have their big man, and then you have Herbert Jones. I didn't really know much about him. He's like all-world defense. They had some great draft picks, and then Jackson Hayes, when he's not tasing cops or getting tased, he's a talented big man. No, I'm just joking around. No, honestly, I don't have I'm going to sit down in about 5 minutes. I just was outside for a second. They have some good pieces. It's not just about the big three. They have a really talented roster.
Right.
Now, Zion's a human question mark, like a walking billboard with a question mark on him, on his back. Who knows? He could score 40 or he could eat 40 big whoppers next year. If he's in shape and actually healthy with a capital H, then they could be a top six team. I mean, I wouldn't fear them in the mighty West. Now the East is getting better too. So, I mean, they're now a really good franchise. I don't think they have championship dreams. Could you guys see them going to the beating Golden State?
I couldn't. And speaking
for,
of Golden State too, speaking of Golden State as well, not only are they getting Andre Iguodala back for one more year.
Oh, come on, man.
So he will basically take up their 14th roster spot. But
he's done.
According to The Athletic, due to the rookie extension rules, if the Warriors do not sign him to an extension by October 17th, Jordan Poole will become a restricted free agent next July.
Uh-huh. Wait a sec. What does that mean, Steve?
So,
what was it going to mean before what you just said? What was it supposed to be before that? What implications
so
does that
basically,
have?
I mean, basically, I don't know the exact thing, but I guess it sounds like that it's basically a more of a financial thing, so that I guess yeah. with the rookie contract thing, with the new rookie extension rules,
okay.
He'll become an RFA if he doesn't get signed by the 17th, which will mean that obviously Golden State will have the ability to match any offer.
They'll match anything and everywhere. You know, he's not going anywhere because, you know, Clay and Clay's position. He's not a point guard. He's Clay's eventual replacement.
Right.
He's
yeah.
not going anywhere. He's staying in Golden State for the next 10 years.
Yeah, which is why really? This is big news, because the way they put it, it sounds like that under the old rules that he could have been able to just sign with another team and Golden State wouldn't have had the opportunity to match.
Okay.
Yeah, is what it sounds like.
I'm so ready for someone to knock off the Warriors, and yet the older I get, the more it's impossible for me to hate a team anymore, right? So when I was growing up, I used to say, "Oh, I hate the Lakers." Obviously I hate the Cowboys. A lot of people either love them or hate them. Now it's like I really respect the Warriors. I just wish they would actually stop being so damn good. So it's like now they have Poole in place. I love Kuminga. They're like quietly reloading their bench while they're winning championships.
And they're getting Wiseman back this year, too. You stole
the words out of my mouth. They haven't even gotten the number two pick in that draft yet. Seven footer Wiseman. If he's good, it could be an upgrade down low for them.
Yeah.
He did look good in the summer league. He's like a much better Mitchell Robinson.
He's big and long. Do you guys think Wiseman's going to be an all-star? Or is it, like, pretty questionable?
Potential. It depends on if he can stay healthy.
Yeah.
And if he's able to produce. Because, I mean, he wasn't looking that bad in his first year. The problem is that he still had a little bit to develop. Like, they immediately started him as their starting center instead of giving him time to develop.
You can't do that.
So maybe if he's now that he's had the last year or so while he's been injured, he's still been able, you know, to learn the system and everything. Maybe perhaps now, especially if he put on a little more muscle. I don't know what he's done this off season, but if he did put on a little more muscle, maybe perhaps he may be able to take better advantage of some players down low.
Yeah, I mean, and then they have Moises Moody. How did they get both those number ones? I'm fond of Kuminga. I don't know much about Moody. Remember though, they had those two number one picks back to each other, like the early to mid first rounds. I mean, they reloaded off the one injury of Klay Thompson. They got, like, Moody, Wiseman, and Kuminga. I mean, they pulled, like, a Popovich. They got, like, almost like a Duncan Robinson right there. They reloaded while they were still in contention.
Yeah, Moody was the next draft. He wasn't the same draft.
Yeah, but Moody, like I meant to articulate, I should have described it better. I'm just astonished they were able to add that much young talent while they were still respectable.
Right.
Moody was in the same draft as Kuminga, so they had two lottery picks
right.
in the same draft. I'm just trying to figure out what that trade came from. They had two lottery picks after the Wiseman deal, where they almost had the Tim Duncan setup. They sucked for 1 year because of Clay and Steph's injuries, so they got Wiseman, and then the next year they had Kuminga and Moody. I mean, I don't know.
Huh.
The Warriors.
Oh, okay.
They're very
Kuminga,
smart. Kuminga
came.
Moody and Kuminga?
Yes. Yeah. Kuminga came from a trade with the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Right.
For who?
Let me look.
I'm assuming they just fleeced the Wolves because
it was the D'Angelo Russell trade. It was the trade where Minnesota sent Andrew Wiggins along with a top three protected first round pick and a second round pick in exchange for D'Angelo Russell, Jacob Evans, and Omari Spellman.
Wow. Robbery. There's certain teams, as you guys know, the front offices are just so much smarter than other front offices. I mean,
right.
Chess versus checkers. I don't know. On a side note, I'm watching Ohio State. Ohio State's just absolutely destroying Wisconsin. They have like third stringers. I think 50 guys on their team could play NFL Sundays almost. I mean,
good because that's
Alabama,
one of my picks.
Alabama. Yeah, I'm not gonna veer off the NBA course, but I'm just astonished, and I put a hundo on them. Right. So life is good. Yeah, I mean Minnesota got fleeced. Now Minnesota with Gobert though. Gobert and Towns. I'd love to be woken up when someone could tell me that Towns actually has a sack and testicles, but he looks good on stats. I see him get bitch slapped in the big moments. So I don't know. Towns is a very polarizing bipolar player, if you will.
Yeah.
So
and there's definitely a rivalry going on between him and Ja Morant actually as well after that playoff series that they had.
Tougher. Catch Ohio State. Boom. Ja Morant, I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. I mean, Ja Morant's so much tougher and such a ballsier, more badass player than Towns. I mean, come on. Towns is flopping around screaming. Then he says he's the best big man shooter ever. I mean, what planet are you from? Give me some
you're watching Ohio State right now. I'm actually watching Arkansas and Texas A&M right now on ESPN.
Looks like Arkansas is about to take the lead.
Arkansas is on fourth down with about – they're letting the clock run down to about a minute and a half left. Yeah, Arkansas is going to try to kick the field goal to put them ahead by one. So,
all right, I'm changing. I was just watching Ohio State because I'm a scoundrel. I was betting on DraftKings. Now I'm going to come back down to reality. Is it on?
Well, I actually picked Ohio State for one of the pools that I'm in. So,
nice.
Right now, as of now, my pick is looking pretty damn good with that score.
Like I mentioned last week, Steve, I just moved, so like my roommate, my dog's here. We're all having fun. They're out for the night, my buddy and his girlfriend. So I'm like here with my dog Harry hanging out, betting a little bit. Point being, long story short, I don't know the channels, so I'm like looking for different things. I'm like, what is ESPN here? Shit. Okay. Now we got it? Okay, we got Arkansas. Wow.
Arkansas.
Low scoring, relatively speaking. I mean, 23-21.
Yeah.
I was expecting in the mid to high 30s for both.
That's the SEC for you.
Oh! Well, Arkansas is more of a – no way. Dude, oh,
he missed
God.
It. Boom. It went right off the top.
He's not getting laid for the rest of the year.
Wow.
Dude, can you imagine being that guy? Yeah, you don't have to run sprints and lift weights. If you're a kicker, you're going to be fucking – someone's going to punch that guy in the butt. Jeez.
No, right in the ball. That's what you're going to get hit. Right in the
ball. My God. Dude. For the
I
game.
Cannot believe
well,
that. I don't think I've ever seen a kick like that. 130
is a light
ball. I don't think I've ever seen a kick like that.
I think they utilized –
I think they utilized all their timeouts. I've never seen that. That was the totem pole.
That was the top of the totem pole. I've never seen that. It was off the top of the bar.
Really?
Yeah, I've never seen that. I have never
Lou, did you
seen
see
that
it?
Out of all
I
the
just
games
turned it on.
That I've seen. Yeah, I've never seen it hit the top three inches of the top bar. I've never seen that out of any football game until tonight. Out of any football game
really?
I've ever seen, I have never seen that
somewhere,
take place.
Somewhere in a dive bar in upstate New York, Scott Norwood is scoffing. He is giggling. He said it wasn't my fault. All these years later, Finkel laces out.
Why? They will have to dive bomb upstate New York and go right now.
Oh, yeah.
Well.
Man, I mean, that's a kicker, man. That's, you know, people laugh about it. Think, I mean, obviously, you got these much bigger, better, superior athletes who are making most of the money, but, like, they're, like, grueling, getting hammered, getting injured, practicing, lifting. Kickers, you know, they're on the side field. They have one job.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's a pressure-packed job, obviously.
Okay.
If you're the GOAT, but if you miss those, man, there's a lot of pressure there. I mean, that kid, imagine being a college student missing that kick.
Yeah.
Imagine going to class on Monday. Do you want to go to class Monday? Dude, I mean.
If you were smart, you wouldn't show your face in public again.
Kid's ruined. I never like to go to class on Mondays, but that's a different story.
Yeah. I am still – I'm just dumbfounded right
now.
Now
he has
a
reason
by seeing that play. By seeing that play, I have never – if somebody even put on Twitter in my 44 years of life, somebody said this on Twitter, in my 44 years of life, I have never seen a football do that.
Yeah,
and now – go right
it didn't come back like a boomerang either. It popped up. That was absolutely out of control. You could live another 50 years, you will not see a kick like that.
No.
The top,
I mean,
the
wow.
top of the top right.
Yeah, you know, even media members are saying we have never seen that before at any level. I am just dumbfounded completely by that. But speaking of football, though, what a performance this past week by Tua Tagovailoa, tying Bob Greece and Dan Marino for the Miami Dolphins record with 6 touchdowns in a single game, which Marino last accomplished that feat back in 1986.
Amazing.
The Dolphins coming back to beat the Ravens 42-38.
Oh yeah.
Now guys, did you see most of the game? I watched highlights, let's be honest. You know, I'm not rooting against them. Bama guy who actually was displaced because of Tua hurts. I like Tua. I'm rooting for the guy because he gets a lot of shit in the media. Pardon my French. Was he throwing bombs or was he throwing 5-yard out passes to Waddle and
bombs
and Tyreek? Because he has now he has 2 guys that can run 90 yards and it's called a 90-yard pass. I mean, what was it?
Bombs.
Was he throwing bombs?
Bombs.
Wow. See what? But I've heard he cannot do that for 2 years now. So now he suddenly has a big golden arm. Jesus.
Well, one of them was completely wide open. For some reason, the defense absolutely forgot about Tyreek Hill, and one of the bombs just went right into his hand, and he's like, "Oh, don't mind if I do," and he could have walked into the end zone basically.
So it must
That's
be play call
how open
here.
He was.
Because I remember watching, you guys remember too, I'm sure. You remember watching last year Miami. It would be like 3rd and 10, and every single damn play, Tua would throw like a 2-yard screen. Like it was almost like his arm was broken, or he was not allowed or not capable of throwing deep. It was mystifying last year, and now he's suddenly reborn. Interesting.
Yeah, it's really, you know, I said this
new coach,
last
new
week.
New head coach.
I said. Yeah, that's the thing too, is the fact that they have a new head coach, Mike McDaniel, who is clearly from these first 2 weeks, he is not afraid to make ballsy moves.
I know some of the plays. Yeah, the guy looks like he's a junior at like UConn, ready to play Call of Duty. The guy looks great.
Yeah,
I'm rooting for the guy. Looks like an intern.
And actually, you know what? I was going to look up the stats, but NFL.com doesn't even have the stats anymore. So,
okay.
I guess it was so game breaking that they complete Miami. outscored Baltimore 28-3 in the fourth quarter to win.
Well,
yeah,
they're playing Buffalo, so good luck with that.
Yeah,
and, here's the thing, though. Buffalo,
they're going to hammer him all day, I think.
The Bills are going to be without Micah Hyde, though.
And they already don't have Tre'Davious White, so now they have two of their best four secondary members out. So they're inviting Tua to air it out.
Yeah, because Micah Hyde is out for the season now.
Yes.
With a neck
injury.
That's
what you call a bunch of hungover or still drunk or drinking or whatever. Aggressively betting people on a Sunday. They're going to wake up tomorrow and be like, oh, yeah, dude, Buffalo's going to rule them. That's a game where Miami's going to either win or cover. Miami's going to cover that game. I can already smell it.
I think
I'm not touching
now
that
with
game
the injuries to Buffalo. I think Miami has a very
chance
now.
I'm not touching
now.
That game. No, I would take Miami if I had to. I'm not betting that game at all.
Right. Yeah, and I'm looking at the injury report right now. Jordan Phillips is out for Buffalo with a hamstring. Ed Oliver is out for Buffalo with an ankle. Yeah, Ed Oliver is out with an ankle
injury.
Jordan
Phillips is like the key to their. He's the anchor to their run defense.
Yeah. So they're going to have no run defense, basically, with both Phillips and Oliver both out.
Yeah, Ed Oliver. Yeah. So both their interior line is shot, and now you got two out of their best three secondary members and a red hot Tua. So what that spells is Miami upset tomorrow. That's in Miami, right?
And they're in Miami.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I had to, I'm not touching that game. What do you guys think? I'm taking Miami there to win that game.
I would probably go with wait a minute. Let me see. What is the spread? I think
But the Bills are so damn good, though. The Bills are so good. They're looking so good.
Yeah. Another thing, too, is that there are certain players who are questionable as well. Gabe Davis, who missed last week with an ankle injury, he's questionable.
Who is Dave Davis?
Mitch Morse.
Who's that?
He's the second string receiver, apart from Stephon Diggs.
Steve, I'm so sorry. Dude, that's totally ridiculous for me. I thought you were saying Dave Davis. Yeah, Davis.
Gabriel Davis is awesome.
Yeah, Gabe Davis is awesome. I was like, who's Dave Davis?
Davis, right.
Davey Davis. Gabe Winfield.
But the Bills are pretty banged up, though. Gabriel Davis is still questionable with his ankle. Dawson Knox is questionable with a foot. Mitch Morse, their starting center, is questionable with his elbow injury. Jordan Poyer is questionable with his foot injury.
The other
team with a mass unit.
Now they have. Now you might have 75% of Buffalo's secondary out versus a red hot throwing quarterback. Versus a bad weak secondary. I mean, Buffalo's obviously a superior squad, but there's a lot of injuries, and look at the other big thing, momentum. Tua's thrown like Joe Montana suddenly. Yeah, I'm thinking I don't think I'm touching them, but if I had to, gun in my head, Miami.
And also,
do you ever go through NFL picks real quick, like pick by pick? For like 10 minutes?
We used to, but we can do that now if you want to.
Yeah, let's do it now.
No, Steve, I would never like, whatever. I was throwing it out there. I thought you just like emailed you. No, I was just like a random idea.
That's
all right. For the future or for whenever, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, we can start to do that again. We used to do that. Honestly, I don't know why I stopped doing that for some reason.
It'd be cool, like, you know what I mean? Night before Sunday, nice little segment, nice little piece of the puzzle.
Well, what? Let's start it up again tonight because
why not?
Obviously. I mean, we'll start off with the Bills in Miami. I probably have Miami on this one because the only way I feel that Buffalo will be able to gut this one out is if Josh Allen has one of those games where he's absolutely unstoppable. But Miami's defense is probably one of the better defenses in the league. So,
and they play great at home, and they want a piece of Josh Allen too. They want to make a statement.
Yeah.
I'm still going to go Buffalo.
Yeah. What's the spread there?
You're sticking with Buffalo?
Are we incorporating the point spread?
Yes.
What's the spread, 6?
I
think it's Miami plus 6, I think.
Yeah, I think right
now.
That'll be the trouble,
Steve. I can look it up, too, if you can look it up. Look up
the
spread for all the games.
It's 5. It's
yeah,
5.
Yeah, have the scoreboard up for NFL. Have the scoreboard up for tomorrow.
Yeah, it's Buffalo by 5 is the spread.
So you like Miami? What kind of game? What kind of game? Low scoring or high scoring?
I think it'll be high.
Yep.
I think with those injuries, it's gonna be low.
Buffalo secondary
low.
Well, with all the injuries piling up, I think it's gonna be a low scoring game.
Lou, most of the injuries though are on Buffalo's defense. That swings the door open for Miami points.
I don't know.
I mean, Tua is going to be thrown against the injured defense.
I don't think Miami's offense can handle it. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. Miami's got a good defense, but I still think they're going to be able to outtake.
I like that, Jake. I like that.
I mean,
that's
it's
cool.
Possible. It is possible. I mean, we have seen Tua make some incredibly stupid decisions.
Yeah, let's not act like he's John Elway off of fucking three parts of
no,
about 3 hours. 3 hours looking good. He looked good for 3 hours. Okay, it's been 3 years. Okay, let's keep him in perspective.
Right.
Baby steps with him. He's not going to be Randall Cunningham suddenly. He could.
But
what do you think
though, Alex?
I think the Bills are going to win the game. I don't know about the spread. I think it'll be like a 27-24. I don't like Dallas Knox is out. Gabe Davis is for the Bills. They have weapons, as you guys know. Josh Allen is the biggest weapon. He can make, you know, lemonade out of anything. So
and another
I think
thing,
the Bills
I'm,
are going to score. Yeah, no, Steve, I actually agree with you because the Bills are going to score on the old school Bears or Miami or Eagles or Giants with LT. This Bills offense can score on anyone. But they're missing Gabe Davis. It's huge.
Yeah,
Dallas Knox is nice. Let's be honest, though. Dallas Knox is like a fourth or fifth option. Josh Allen's not losing sleep tonight without him.
Right.
He has other weapons. You know, he obviously has Stephon Diggs as good as any receiver right now playing. But their defense is totally kind of at the moment, they're really handcuffed. They're limited as far as injuries. So red hot Tua, high scoring. I'd see like a 31 to 28, like last minute. I think Josh Allen kind of pulls it out at the end, just because I think overall they're a little bit they're better than the Dolphins.
Yeah, and also another thing too is Davis isn't necessarily out. He's questionable right now, but he did miss last week. So
interesting.
So, I mean, it is possible that he does
nice
end up
weapons.
Playing.
They have some nice weapons. They don't have a bell cow running back, but they don't need one because, you know what? Josh Allen's their best running back. So,
yeah.
I think
the Dolphins, though, are going to be able to capitalize on the loss of Micah Hyde. And I have a feeling they may try to exploit that part of the field.
Well, yeah, and Tre'Davious White, too. And then, like you said, if Poyer is questionable, if anyone player is questionable, yeah, if they suit up, great. But the availability, I mean, if someone suits up, as you guys know, so now he's a little bit vulnerable to getting beat. And then you're already missing Buffalo's probably Buffalo's best defender is their other corner, Tre'Davious White. Now they're missing probably at least 50% of their secondary. And two is red hot.
Right.
So I see a lot of points. I think, honestly, Buffalo wins but doesn't cover. I think it's going to be a shootout because two is red hot facing a weak, injured, suddenly weak because of injury, an injured secondary.
Right.
And Miami, this is a huge prove it game for them. This is Miami's Super Bowl. It's a brand new coach. So, I mean, these guys are going to be fired up, ready to fucking run through a wall. Buffalo's already, like, doing well.
Yeah.
Buffalo's obviously on a mission, but they've had a huge
they're due for a come down. You can't play 100 miles an hour every week. You know what I mean? Buffalo has been through, what, they're on prime time 2 weeks in a row. Huge
yeah.
wins. Now they're going to Miami. They might be like the old fat cat, like a little hungover, a little fat, a little content. Miami is like
right.
the underdog coming in. Miami has a lot more to prove than Buffalo. So I'd take
right.
For the point spread now, actually, Steve, my official pick, Miami.
Okay.
Yeah. That, you know, that being said, I think with it being
Miami
five
covers.
With it being 5 points, I think Miami
field
could
goal.
Potentially cover.
Field goal. Field goal field late. Goal. Field goal late. Buffalo, I think, wins. Miami covers. I'm going Miami.
All right.
Yeah, I would, you know, I agree. I actually think Miami may win outright, just simply
I
because
think so too now, actually.
The big thing
well,
that you have to keep into account is Jalen Waddle and yeah, it's you know, not just the duo of Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill, but also
fucking terrified.
You know, we see what happens when the Patriots go down to Miami every single year. You know,
oh, yeah.
a team that's
fucking,
used
like,
to playing,
it's like fucking going to the Bermuda Triangle. They get fucking lost.
Yeah, it's a team that usually that's used to playing in cold weather, like the Bills, and all of a sudden they go to a warm climate like Miami, and it's almost like they completely forget how to play.
Absolutely. And the
yeah.
and again, with the new head coach, with Tua looking for something to prove, the new head coach, you can't underestimate that enough. Those guys are ready to rock. And the players, I mean, from the kicker to the linebacker to the quarterback, everyone's trying to prove that they're no joke. It's cute. The mental part of sports right there, I mean, the game, simply put, the game is a lot more important tomorrow to the Miami players than it is to Josh Allen and the Bills. Because the Bills, if they lose that, they can win another 7 in a row. They can still go 14-3. The Bills are comfortable going to bed tonight. The Dolphins are, like, ready to play right now. So, I mean,
and
like you said, Steve, teams going in there, like, the Patriots would get shellacked. They get wrecked.
Cool.
Belichick couldn't figure it out because the Dolphins always play hungry at home. They want to prove that they're as good as those other teams. Yeah, I
right.
think the Dolphins, that's a live dog tomorrow is a better.
Now, what about the Ravens and the Patriots? The Ravens, they will be without Ryan Stanley, their starting left tackle.
Yeah, Notre Dame.
The Patriots, they seem like they have gone back to the offense that they played last year after,
yep.
for some reason, trying
that.
To experiment with a new with a new system.
Letting Matt Patricia coach offense. It's, Bill was like, no, it's not going to work.
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, though, I still have to go with the Ravens on this because from what I know, it looks like J.K. Dobbins is going to be able to play with his knee injury. I think
what can you expect from him, though, the first day back? What is that, a year, almost over a year out? You know what I mean?
True.
They got to ease him back in.
Yeah. I mean, you know, just from what we've seen the first 2 weeks out of the Ravens, obviously Lamar Jackson is betting on himself, which is why he turned down that massive extension. And the Patriots
yeah.
never really do well against Lamar. So
I have this
bad feeling that unless the Patriots – defense becomes the key part of this game. I just have a bad feeling that Lamar Jackson's just going to absolutely dunk on this Patriots team the whole entire game.
Is it in New Steve, I promise next week and for the next 10 years, I will not have to ask this. I was walking my dog earlier. Refresh my memory. Is it in New England or in Baltimore? I should already know that.
It is in New England.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, well, athleticism, New England, I don't know what to think of it. You're more the math guy. I mean, proud tradition. Contract year, Lamar, like you said, Lamar likes giving them fits. I'm going Baltimore.
What do you think? Or, yeah, Lou, you said the Ravens too, right?
I did, yes.
I'm not going to rush to the gate. I'm not going to be logging in tomorrow morning to bet that. That's a perilous. That's kind of a. Obviously, there's no toss-ups. There's no ties in sports. But as a bettor, I wouldn't touch that. But if I'm making a pick as a, sports analyst like we are tonight, I'd go Baltimore.
And the line,
what is it?
It's 2.5 for Baltimore.
It's 2.5 now?
And 2.5. And the over-under is set at... What did it start off as?
Oh, sorry, Steve. I was just going to say, it started off as -6 Buffalo. So there's a lot of money coming in. A lot of people are betting on Miami.
It's a big drop.
Oh no, I'm not talking about Miami. I'm talking about Baltimore and New England.
Oh, sorry, man. I thought when you said Balt, I thought you said Buff. Oh yeah,
no,
Baltimore.
No.
Wake me up, guys. I mean, if you saw 100 games and you were going to bet on 100 games, when is it ever a 1-point game? It's going to be a field goal.
Never.
It's going to be 4 or 5. Obviously, 7 is a big number. When I see 2 points, it's like basically just tell me who the better team is. I'm taking the better team. 2 points.
Exactly.
2 points, nothing. What are you going to win? 28-26? Give me a brick. That doesn't happen. Three
and
is
the over under.
Six when you combine field goals and extra points. 6 is a big number, obviously. 7 is the biggest number. But when it comes to like 2 or 2.5, dude, I'm taking the better team. Usually.
Yeah, and the over under is set for 44.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't trust that. I wouldn't touch that. Because, I mean, sometimes Lamar's throwing up beach balls, gone with the wind.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't trust that guy to throw the ball. So it could be a 14-10 game, it's not going to be a shootout. So I would not touch the over.
Right. And one thing to note, too, Gillette Stadium is also a wind tunnel. So that could potentially play a factor.
Yeah.
There's been times where if there's ever been a shift in the wind, that ball can travel faster than any other than in any other stadium.
How's the New England defense now? Do they still? I mean, McCourty. I mean, they lost Van Noy. Hightower.
They lost.
I don't see the studs there.
Yeah, Hightower, I mean, let's face it, Hightower was slow last year. So, you know, it's not like they're
not
really
losing Mike Singletary.
Anything. Yeah.
It's
not like they're really missing anything by not having Hightower this year.
They're not writing his mom asking for him to come out of retirement.
Right. But, I mean, they have pretty much the same people minus – you know, Hightower and minus Van Noy. I'd say maybe the most notable change is Josh Uche. Because of it, Josh Uche is now one of the starting linebackers instead of coming off of the bench. Mack Wilson is at the right inside linebacker position, coming over from Cleveland, and Jalen Mills is now one of the starting corners, as opposed to instead of J.C. Jackson and Jonathan Jones, it's now.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
What's the next game on the slate?
I think we lost him.
Lawson, Louie?
No, I think we lost Steve.
Hang on.
Can we call back in? Is it 12
sorry,
or 11?
Oh. That.
What's the cutoff? 12?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, we're back.
Sorry about that. So, for some reason, normally, once it hits the 10:45 mark, for some reason, my phone always disconnects.
Yeah.
But I'm back now. What I was saying, though,
Steve,
beforehand,
we're going 12
before.
Or 12 or 11?
We're going to try to go for 12. I mean,
yeah,
the
love it.
So the live portion of the broadcast basically ends at 11, and then what Blog Talk does is it tapes an extra hour, so it allows us an extra hour of talk. However,
yeah,
the thing is, if I get disconnected during the extra hour, then it'll knock off all of us.
We are screwed.
But the plan is to go until 12. So
yeah.
Oh, nice.
But we, you know, what I was saying before I got disconnected was that instead of J.C. Jackson and Jonathan Jones at the corner spots, they now have Jonathan Jones and Jalen Mills, which,
right,
I mean, it's produced subpar results so far.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, it seems like apart from that and the fact that they now have Josh Uche starting and Mack Wilson was brought over from Cleveland, for the most part, the defense is pretty much the same. So, you know, there's not much of a it's not a huge difference compared to last year. So the defense is still the strong point, if anything, of this Patriots roster.
Yeah, I mean, Green Goblin, he was an Eagle, seventh round pick, and
right,
he was like a crowd favorite because he would always be fired up. He had the bright green neon hair, but he would get burned too much. So when he went to the Patriots, I was kind of surprised. He played well, though, against Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl, where Nick Foles won the Super Bowl. So I wasn't surprised
that Belichick
has an affinity for guys that he plays against that he respects.
But,
yeah,
I think that's partially why. I think that's partially why Belichick went after him last offseason.
Yeah, it was affordable, too. I mean, probably, a two-year deal? He's
yeah,
not a mega free agent.
No, actually, it wasn't a two-year deal. It was, I believe it was a four-year deal, if I recall correctly.
Wow.
I think it was 4 years.
Yeah, let me bring that up,
Go.
Actually.
He's a Tiger. Go Tiger.
Yeah, let me bring that up, actually. Yeah, it was a four-year, $24 million deal that he had signed with New England.
Jalen Mills would make, like, two or three huge, awesome hits, like, fire up the crowd, and then he'd get burned on, like, third and 20. So
yeah.
I don't dislike the guy. I wasn't crying when he left Philadelphia.
Right. Right. I mean, that was one of the many instances that happened last year where if there was one guy that was getting burned on that defense when it comes
Jalen
to
Mills.
The corners, it was Jalen Mills.
Well, he rolls the dice, too. He tries to jump routes, which is great for a little bit, but then
yeah,
on that one play, like you said, he gets burned a lot.
Exactly.
The Eagles corners now. You saw Darius play on Monday night. I mean, James Bradbury from the Giants. The Eagles have a great secondary, but we're not going to. We'll go to them later.
Yeah, you know, actually, you know, it's funny you say that because the Eagles, they do face the Commanders on Fox, I think, this week.
Mr. Wentz.
I mean, I'll just say it right off the bat. I don't care if the spread is 6.5 for the Eagles. I'm choosing the Eagles with whatever spread it is because
they're going to mercilessly destroy Wentz.
Yeah, Wentz has not been impressive whatsoever this season so far for the Commanders. It's pathetic, honestly, some of the drives that he has put out there.
Yeah, it's full gold. He puts up empty sets. In the clutch, you don't want Wentz running the team.
Exactly. I mean, Lou, what are your thoughts on Eagles and Commanders? Do you think the Eagles take a commanding division lead?
Yeah, I do. Washington's pathetic. I mean, they haven't done anything done right this year, so I don't even see being close. Forget it.
Yeah, I would.
Whatever happened to the Commanders or Guardians or whatever they're called now? Whatever happened to Chase Young from Ohio State? The number one pick. He was like the next Reggie White. He's not even playing.
He's there.
What happened to him?
Wait, he isn't? Hang on.
Yeah, I saw the stat line the other day. He wasn't in the lineup.
Oh, he was placed on the he started the year on the reserve physically unable to perform list. Yeah, with a ACL injury. It doesn't say if it was a tear or anything, but that he started off the year on an AC with an ACL injury, and he's been on the physically unable to perform list since. Okay. So this was from last year, actually, when he tore his ACL in week 10 against the Tampa Bay Bucks. So he's still technically on, he's still recovering from that technically.
Yeah.
And he didn't even participate in training camp or preseason. Because before training camp started, he was placed on the physically unable to perform list. So, no word yet on whether or not when he will be eligible to come back. But that still is, you know, that's a very significant loss from the Commanders' defense, though. So.
Yeah, I mean, well, great. Carson Wentz is kind of acting like he's reborn in Washington, and it's interesting that he's playing his old heartbreak hotel. He's playing against the Eagles. I think the Eagles right now, they're going to blitz him all day. There's no love lost from the Eagles. Now you still don't. Every year things change, people change, right? So the pieces are different. Doug Peterson's not there. But the players are going to remember him. Players are going to go and hunt his head. They're going to try to hammer him.
Exactly. Especially with the, some of the comments that he's made since leaving Philly. Needless to say, even though it's in Washington, or technically it's in Maryland, it's not in Washington. They're in Maryland.
Right.
It's like the Giants. They play in Jersey.
Yeah.
New Jersey Jets.
But still, though, you know, there's going to be no love lost. We'll put it that way.
No.
You did say the Eagles.
I'm sticking to it.
But you know, you were talking about a resurgence when it comes to careers. What about Joe Flacco? All of a sudden, the Jets are 1-1. And Flacco now faces Cincinnati, which Cincinnati is favored by 6 at MetLife Stadium.
Yeah. Well, if Flacco keeps playing as, I think, you know, this there might be a turning point for the Jets. And I think they're capable of being the mess of Bengals. I mean, they're just trying to, you know, recover from the Super Bowl loss. So
yeah,
this might be the Jets' golden opportunity.
Now, that on the flip side of that, Stephen Lou. Lou, do you want to put in anything more on that game? I'm sorry, I never meant to cut you off.
Which one?
Jets
and the Bungles? Okay.
Yeah, Bengals-Jets. You got any of that?
Yeah, I mean, Flacco, you know, despite being a dinosaur, I mean, he's still got some muscle left in him. Of course, you know, we have to wait and see how well his quarterback returns. But if Flacco can stay the way he is, like he's in a – in week 2, they may have something here. And the Bengals, they haven't recovered yet from the Super Bowl loss, which is very common because the team that usually loses the Super Bowl, they have a tough time bouncing back.
Right.
In that year. Yeah, they do.
I mean, just take a look at San Francisco. Look at San Francisco when they lost to Kansas City. You know, they didn't play like the same San Francisco team that had gotten to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's true.
Very common.
I would also say, though, that San Francisco was probably more veteran-laden, whereas the Bengals, if you look at their best players, I'd say the top 10 Bengals are all under the age of 26, 25. Young. So I think they're like,
right.
They're, you know what I mean? I don't think there's a Super Bowl hangover for the Bengals. They're young and cocky. They want to come back and smack people in the face.
Here's the thing with the Bengals,
though. They were a field goal away from week one win. So the Bengals are not like being lazy. The Bengals are probably going to come in and try to score 50 points on the Jets.
Here's the thing with the Bengals, though. They did so much this offseason to try and improve their offensive line. They brought in Ted Karras from New England. They brought in Lyle Collins from Dallas. And it almost seems like there wasn't really even much of an improvement to their offensive line because Burrow is still getting absolutely destroyed out there on the field. So, I mean, you know, what the hell is going on?
I was talking to my buddy James recently about it, though. I mean, the Bengals were a better team than the Rams. I still think they should have won that Super Bowl. They had two late flags. That was the Bengals Super Bowl. So I think they're going to come out blasting tomorrow.
I hope they do.
I mean, they can't keep losing. They can't keep losing. If you go 0-3, come on. Joey Burrow and those guys are going to.
Yeah,
I don't know. Jets are a wild card. I mean, Bengals are a lot better. What's the spread? What's the spread on that game?
Cincinnati by 6.
Yeah, I'm going Bengals. I don't care where the game is played.
And it's
the Bengals
like Stadium too.
A much better team than the Jets.
Yeah, I agree
Bengals
with that too. I agree with that too. I would go with Cincinnati.
Because I don't think it's going to be close. I think after a while they're going to get the world right now because they're 0-2 and they shouldn't be. So they're going to send a message tomorrow. I think they'll put up about 38 points, 38-14, 38-17.
Right.
Bengals by 20. That's a pick. I'm going to take Bengals tomorrow.
You know what you want to. You want to talk about surprises? How about the surprisingly powerhouse? We'll get to the Jaguars. We'll get to the Jaguars. The surprisingly powerhouse offense of the Detroit Lions.
Oh yeah,
taking on the Minnesota Vikings.
I'll just say one thing. What is Matt Stafford thinking now? Like, gee. You know, maybe I was too harsh on the Lions. Maybe I'll think about,
The Lions now have a really good offensive line. The last two drafts, they've added awesome offensive linemen, and they have St. Brown. They have a great running back in DeAndre Swift. Again, not to overstate it, the Lions have a really good offensive line. It starts up front. Big people beat up little people. That's what Andy Reid. I know I'm an Eagles. I'm biased. Whatever. No, but it's
they got Hockenson too.
The Lions have a really good line now. The Lions scared the shit out of the Eagles. They could have easily won Week One. The Lions could be 2-0. The Lions are legit. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and they got Hockenson too as well on that.
Oh, great. He's a great weapon. So you have a great running back. You have a really, really, really top five, top four, top three line in the league. Offensive line, and then, like you said, you have Hockenson, Swift, and then they have St. Brown. I always butcher his name. Really good possession receiver. Then they added DJ Chark. I know he's inconsistent, but they have weapons on offense. They have a lot of weapons. And Dan Campbell, I love him as a coach. They have a pretty good defense. It's not great, but it's like solid. It's like a B minus, maybe a B plus. I think the Lions are a year away. I'm not going to be a fool and say they're playoffs, but they're on their way to like becoming a good team. So this year, I think the Lions will win 8 games. I could see them taking tomorrow. I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, Kirk Cousins, the guy throws like he's blindfolded. I mean, when he's under pressure, if I were a coordinator going against Kirk Cousins, I'd just blitz him. The guy is like a deer in headlights every time.
Yeah, and you know the Minnesota the Vikings are favored by 6, and I'm not really sure I like that that spread.
What? No, they can come out. You can use the pissed off revenge angle. They can come out really pissed because they got embarrassed Monday night. But you could Yeah. You could also look at the other vantage point of the other angle of the Lions are for real and they're hungry. I'm taking Lions there.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I think that the Lions, they definitely have something going right now, especially ever since they got their first win last year. It almost seems like after that first win, things have all of a sudden been going up for Detroit ever since.
I'll tell you what, man. I mean, just having watched them week one against the Eagles, they have a really good – they have a solid team. I know I get carried away. Sometimes I exaggerate a bit about, you know, believing in different teams that I like. I like the underdog overall. But, you know, I'm telling you, the Lions are legit. Like I said, they have a good, really good offensive line. Starts there. They have a good defense.
Yeah.
They added Hutchinson. Hutchinson's like a young J.J. Watt, dude. That guy's amazing. He had 3 sacks last week. They have a good defense. They have a really good line. Goff is Goff. I mean, he's putting up some really good stats now because he's got weapons. Lions are for real.
What are your thoughts on that, Lou? Do you think the Lions take it, or do you think the Vikings recover from their embarrassment?
I think the Lions are onto something here. I think the Lions can take
it.
The Vikings? I'm not going the Vikings.
We do have JB joining us for the extra hour here. JB,
nice.
what are your thoughts on Detroit this year?
Uh-oh. I'm one of the last people to ask that question. I don't know, really. They sound a lot better than what they used to be. That's for darn sure.
Good point.
You know, one of the guys saying that they're going to win 8, I'd say maybe I was going to go maybe 7.
Okay.
Maybe they will go, 8-8. I don't know. But sounds like, a lot better than what they've been doing, really.
I mean, that is realistic. Like, I could definitely see 7 wins at the very least, you know. I mean, we got to remember this is still a team that's growing with all the draft picks, all the high draft picks in the first round that they've had over the past couple of years, and now that it seems like they've really got something here with Amon-Ra St. Brown, it really seems like they finally are maybe perhaps breaking through that ceiling almost.
They've turned a corner.
Right.
Hey, JB, it's your buddy Alex out in Connecticut, man. JB, good to see you, man. Good to hear from you again. Yeah, when I said 8 wins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was probably a little bit optimistic. I think I would probably support what you said. Honestly, realistically, probably 7 wins. But I like what I see out of them. They're high effort. I mean, obviously, it starts with the coach. Dan Campbell's a really good guy, really, really good leader of men. They believe in the system now. I like their draft picks. As Steve said, St. Brown, that wide receiver is incredible. So now they have a really good line. Yeah, I mean, 7-8 wins. I mean, they're not a doormat anymore. They're not getting stepped on.
Right.
Which is cool to see because
right.
I love that the city of Detroit is starved for champions. You know, it's a tougher city, obviously. It's fun to see them doing well.
And another thing to keep in mind as well is perhaps the potential distraction of Hard Knocks, because they are the they were the focus of Hard Knocks this season.
I think it helped them though. I mean, they kind of believe in themselves now. They got kind of a little bit of a swagger.
Oh yeah!
I mean, when it comes to if you put the Cowboys on there, they're a bunch of Kardashians.
Well, come
they,
on!
They act like their shit doesn't stink. But like a young, hungry team, it kind of gives them some confidence. We're like, wow, we're on TV now. We're for real. I think it kind of actually helped them, which is rare for Hard Knocks. Usually it's like a kiss of death. It's like a Kardashian curse.
Yeah. Usually. Well, you know what? Since we're talking about curses, you know, now we go from a team that has been on the rise, it seems, with Detroit, to now two teams that face off tomorrow that it seems like all of a sudden, it seems like they can't buy a win this year with the Raiders under Josh McDaniels taking on the Titans, who are, both of them are surprisingly 0-2 to start out the year. And not just that, but also the fact that specifically with the Raiders, they have Davante Adams, and yet Adams has barely been a factor this year. Not to mention, there are injuries on both sides. First, the Raiders will be without Hunter Renfrow, their star receiver, who is out with a concussion. The Titans will not have their starting left tackle, Taylor Lewan, who is out for the year with a knee injury. They will be without Bud Dupree, who's out with a hip injury. I mean, this is one of those games where it's basically injuries galore for both teams. And the line somehow is Vegas by 2, and I think that is mainly because that they feel that eventually, that at some point Davante Adams is going to have his welcome to Vegas game, basically, where he outright destroys the opposing team's defense. But so far, we haven't seen it. And honestly, you know, I don't even know how to pick this game because the Titans have so many people out, but the Raiders have Derek Carr. So, I mean, Alex, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on the on this matchup? Because I mean, this is like a tale of two teams that can't even buy a win if they even tried.
Yeah, I mean, Carr's been so close and so criticized for a long time. So, personally, I never bought into him fully. I wouldn't start a franchise with Carr. I also wouldn't kick him off my team if I was a brand new first-year head coach. I wouldn't cry at night. I wouldn't lose sleep if he was my quarterback. I also would not try to sign him to my team. So he's a good player, right? He's not an Elway. He's not a Randall Cunningham. He's not a, you know, he's not a Mahomes. He's not a great player. He's good.
Right.
Now the Raiders obviously added his boy, Davante Adams. That AFC West, sorry, Jesus, nice, not a typo, nice. Lots of speech.
AFC
Weezy. The AFC West, thank you, Alex, learned how to spell and pronounce. The AFC West is a juggernaut, so every week they're going to be faced with tough opponents. They're 0-2. I mean, I think the Raiders get it done tomorrow. Overall, though, I mean, I think I would put the Chargers, who showed the world, including us, a lot. I mean, Herbert's incredible. They have Khalil Mack now. They have a great defense. They have Keenan Allen. He was missing in that Chiefs game. The Raiders are going to have trouble making the playoffs because now the Chargers are awesome, and the Chiefs are always going to be the Chiefs as long as Mahomes is alive and Andy Reid's around.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, tomorrow I'll take the Raiders. I think long-term, though, they're going to struggle to get in the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm going to go with the Raiders too because I think we may be seeing the downfall of Ryan Tannehill, to where
at some point this season,
I would not be surprised at some point this season if we see Malik Willis become the starter for Tennessee.
I agree.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I don't mean to steal the microphone, but I agree with you there. I mean,
they're kind of phasing him out. It also doesn't help that they lost A.J. Brown, who's absolutely destroying people on the Eagles now. Incredible receiver.
Right.
Like, you have Derrick Henry in his – not even in his prime now. I mean, these running backs, they're tanks. These guys get tackled by 10 people every play for 3 hours every Sunday. Their bodies break down quickly. You have to maximize
– That's right.
While you have Derrick Henry on your turf, on your field, you have to make the best of it. They traded A.J. Brown. It's like, what are they doing? And then they drafted Malik Willis. So, yeah, the writing's on the wall. I mean, Tannehill's probably got this year, and that's it. He'll float around.
Exactly.
He might go to, like, you know, he'll be in Houston or, you know, name another team that needs a quarterback. I don't think he's going to be long for he's not going to stay in Tennessee forever.
Lou, what are your thoughts on this?
Titans.
You think the Titans break out of their funk?
Yeah, I do. Raiders are much better.
All right, JB, what about you? These are two teams that did not expect to start off this season 0-2, but at the same time, these are two teams that are clearly better on paper than what they've shown so far out on the field.
Yeah, I like forget who it was talking about the Raiders. I like the Raiders too. And I guess I'm looking at the, points for and points against, and it just looks like, Titans are just shitting in the weeds, more or less.
That's a lot of big shit.
Yeah. Another team, hate to mention my Bengals, but... seems like they're shitting in the weeds too this year.
JB, we actually talked about the Bengals before you came on the air, and we were
just before you came on, I made a random remark about how fired up Joe Burrow is going to come out tomorrow, because some critics, some commentators out there, well, it's a Super Bowl hangover. I said, hey, you know what? They're all young. They still have a lot to prove, and they're pissed off. They're not relaxing. Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Joe Burrow, Joe Mixon, the whole core, the best players in the Bengals are all young. They're not lazy right now. They're coming out. I think they're going to hammer the Jets tomorrow. What do you think about that?
I think so too. And another thing is, this year's Bengals are totally different than last year's Bengals.
How so?
Yeah.
It just seems like they played a lot better last year.
Okay.
I know one thing, if they would get maybe a couple offensive linemen to protect the quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I told Steve this as soon as the Bengals got Burrows, as soon as they got him as the number one pick, I said they're going to have to get somebody also to protect this guy. If they can get some people to protect him, kicking ass. They just need somebody on the offensive line to, protect the guy.
Here's the problem.
It's not his fault that he's getting sacked, six times, seven times a game.
A quarterback's only going to be as good as his line. I mean, obviously, there's people that can make miracles, but overall,
You got to protect the quarterback.
Exactly.
And here's the problem too, though. Like I said earlier, they did address the offensive line. They went out there and they got Ted Karras from New England, and they got Lyle Collins from Dallas.
Sucks. And Collins sucks.
And they still suck.
Even more.
Collins is fighting Aaron Donald, destroying the guy in practice. They had those joint practices in preseason. Collins is like, that's my quarterback. Don't touch him. Well, now it's the regular season. Can you protect your quarterback? I mean, you said, AB and Steve, they knew they fell a little bit short. I mean, look at that last play in the Super Bowl. If they had, another millisecond, it's all timing and reads. NFL is so – it's so complicated. Those milliseconds. The offensive line is so damn important. It's not sexy. The casual fans, the fantasy fans, don't really look at it. But the offensive line is everything. And they went out and addressed it, and now it's like they went backwards. They invested in it, and it looks worse than it was last year.
Yeah, really. Maybe they need to do some reinvesting. Not maybe.
I mean,
they need to do some reinvesting.
I just thought it was very weird, though, that they made all of this investment, and yet Burrow is still getting absolutely destroyed like he was last year.
Yeah. Getting hammered. Yeah, it's like nothing. Yeah. It got worse.
Exactly.
I don't know. Apparently, I'm not gonna. Pronounce. I'm not going to say that I watch every snap. I watch plenty of Bengals.
Right.
I went to school out in Ohio, so two of my best friends are Bengals fans. AB, so I feel what you're saying. They're like, dude, they invested in the line, and it looks a lot worse than it used to be. So, I mean, Burrow is just under pressure. He's also had a couple big injuries. You don't want to see the guy, blow out his knee again. So they're on thin ice. They got to really get their shit together. Starting tomorrow.
You
can't go 0-3. If you lose the Jets, then it's a real tailspin. I mean, that's a get right game. That's a get right spot tomorrow. They got to get right tomorrow.
Yeah. Before we go on with our football picks, let's shift a little bit to Major League Baseball as. I want to get these two things in before we continue. Albert Pujols officially joins the 700 home run club after last night, joining Barry Bonds, Hank Aaron, and Babe Ruth as the only hitters. And I'll put Bonds with an asterisk next to his name, joining them as the only four hitters in baseball
history.
Why
would you put an asterisk?
To have hit. Because of the steroids.
Okay.
that 700 that little, home runs. That little... Well, I mean, come on. Even if he didn't, even if he didn't do the steroids, maybe he still could have hit 700 regardless. But it kind of taints it, even though he did it with steroids.
I mean, Lou and I, we're in the New York – I'm in Connecticut. I work in New York City. I mean, they're saying Judge is about to break records. People in New York City don't even look at Bonds. He doesn't even count as far as the record books.
Exactly.
I mean, there's different pockets of the country feel differently. A lot of people think Bonds is a cheater. I think he's the best hitter I've ever seen, and I think he's a cheater. I'm kind of like halfway either way.
And you know what? That's another thing too. The other thing to talk about as well is Aaron Judge is currently tied with Babe Ruth, and he's now one away from tying Roger Maris's record for home runs in the season. And I don't know how many games do they have left in the regular season.
Well,
about
12 or something, I think.
So he needs only two home runs to have the record all to himself.
Watch him do it at the end of the last game of the season.
I mean, possibly. I would think that he would be able to get it done you know, before the end of the season.
That's what Maris did the last day.
Yeah, I mean, hell, you know, the last couple of games, specifically against Boston's bullpen, I would think that that would have been a golden opportunity for him, because especially, you know, some of the relievers, I know I'm a Red Sox fan and I'm dunking on my own team here for a reason, but, you know, this bullpen is so atrocious that you could have a pitcher like the youngster Brayan Bello, who finally had his best game ever as a major leaguer this year, and then the bullpen absolutely blows it to shit. You know, this bullpen cannot hold a lead to save their life. And I feel bad for John Schreiber, who got the loss today, because John Schreiber has been the one that has been leaned on the most, because he's literally the only dependable reliever in this bullpen.
Wow.
Everybody else is like a 5 ERA or above, or they're on injured reserve. So it's, you know, as far as Judge goes, I think eventually at some point, wait a minute, let me see. Okay, 25th, 26th. So their next series is, Well, I don't think he'll have to deal with Alec Manoa next series, because they're playing Toronto, and I think Manoa just pitched tonight. So I don't think he'll have to deal with Manoa. You know what? I don't know. That Toronto series could be a problem for Judge. Let's see. Who do they have to end the year? To end the year, they have... Oh, Baltimore. I would be very surprised if Judge, if he can't break it against Toronto, or maybe even tomorrow against Boston, I would be very surprised if he can't break it against Baltimore. Wow. Very surprised. Or even then, actually, their last series, I think, is against Texas. If he can't break it against Baltimore or Texas, then it just wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
This season.
He's so close to it, though.
I know. That's the thing. He's so close to it. But,
yeah.
I mean,
if
he can't do it tomorrow, or he can't do it in the Toronto series, he has two golden opportunities, six golden opportunities in six games to get it done against Baltimore and against Texas.
But if that was in the old Yankee Stadium, that would have been a home run.
Oh, it would have been. As a matter of fact, if it was to right field is the shortest, right, or is it left field?
I think it is right field.
If it was to right field, that would have been out. That would have been gone.
Yes.
So.
I respect Judge. I definitely respect the Yankees lore. I grew up going to Dave Winfield, Don Mattingly, Ron Guidry, this and that.
yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong. That's a damn wiffle ball stadium half the time. I'm sorry. That's a wiffle ball stadium.
Oh, it's true. I'm not disputing that one. I mean, Yankee Stadium, they say that's maybe the easiest stadium to hit a homer out of.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's I do think that Judge eventually gets it done. Pujols with his 700th home run. I remember Lou that we had discussed on the other show whether or not it would be, you know, if it'll be more than 700 or if he'll finish with exactly 700. I think there's a big possibility, Lou. He could. What did you say it was? 714 or something that you said?
I said, well, it's.
Or was it 712 or something like that?
I think I said 710. It's
710.
Still doubtful, but I doubt it.
I think it is doable. Especially if he has more two home run games like he did last night, I think it's definitely doable.
Well, it's doable, but it's kind of hard to do that, you know, consistently.
Well, yeah, obviously. But, I mean, I think it's definitely doable unless he takes his foot off of the gas pedal, because he was kind of like, okay, you know, I want to hit 700, so let me be kind of selfish and,
yeah,
you know, hit for myself as opposed to hitting for the team. So
right.
Let me hit for myself, basically. Now that he's got that done, maybe he may decide, okay, let me, you know, I got 700 out of the way, let me go back to doing what's best for the team, not necessarily hitting for power, but maybe hitting for contact.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, I think it was also very fitting, too, the fact that he did it at Dodger Stadium, because he played for the Dodgers last year. He spent pretty much – The two cities that he spent his entire career in have been St. Louis and L.A.
Yes.
So, you know, it was only fitting for him to break it in, or for him to set that milestone in one of those two cities. So it's definitely it's a nice capper, I should say, to his final season. But anyways, let's get back to our football picks. We have our next matchup. We have the Houston Texans against the Chicago Bears, and honestly, from what I've seen out of the Texans, I'm not really impressed, even though they got Lovie Smith as their coach. Yeah, I think this is an easy Bears win against the Texans, because the Texans so far haven't even shown that they can, that they can outscore anybody this season.
Texas is another team like the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to make sure people know that they're to be respected. They're not going to be pushed over anymore. They didn't add nearly as much overall free agency and draft as the Lions, but Davis Mills is getting it done. They have a really nice young running back from Florida, Damian Pierce. They're getting it done. They also have a couple nice wide receivers, Brandon Cooks, and they're not playing around. I think they can win six or seven games. They're not a pushover anymore.
No. They're not.
What are your thoughts on Houston, Lou? I mean, they lost 16-9 to Denver last week. And they tied with an Indianapolis team that Indianapolis basically gave them so many opportunities to try and win it in overtime, and they still couldn't do it.
Yeah, but I'm cursed when it comes to the Bears. They never win with when I take them. So based on that just alone, I'm not taking the Bears.
JB, what are your thoughts on this matchup?
I'd take the Bears.
What?
So, you know, it's just, to me, I just think they're a better team. Why? I don't know. You know, it just they just come across as being a better team than the Texans. I think they're better than 3 points spread.
I'll tell you though, they'll need Justin Fields to have more than either 121 yards or 70 yards,
right?
Like he put up last week against Green Bay.
Yeah.
They're going to need a hell of a lot more production out of Fields than what they've gotten these first 2 weeks. All right. We also have the Chiefs and the Colts. And Chiefs are favored by 5.5 points. Honestly, I don't even think that this game is even a question because the Matt Ryan era of Indianapolis is – it's been absolutely horrible so far. And actually, yes. it's kind of been pretty pathetic, some of the plays that that the Colts have given up. So I think this is an easy Chiefs win. I don't think they even have a problem.
No question.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, Matt Ryan's struggling. He's not adapting well to his new surroundings. Pittman's coming back from injury. The Chiefs are, again, another team trying to prove a point. They really don't miss much. They don't need Tyreek Hill. I'd take them by 2 touchdowns over the Colts. I'm going Chiefs.
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy to show that, you know, there's not going to really be much of a I would actually think it might be more than 2 touchdowns. I think it'll be more than 14 points.
I wouldn't be surprised
because the Colts haven't shown anything this year to show that they're even that they're capable of holding a lead. Oh, and it looks like let me just confirm this. Let me see.
Uh-oh.
I think we may have a pretty huge upset here. Kansas
we
State,
do.
41-34 over Oklahoma.
Yep.
Oh, gee.
Wow.
That makes you say,
wow. That's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, who would have thought?
Number six, Oklahoma. What was that, JB?
There goes my week.
Yeah. Number six, Oklahoma falls to unranked Kansas State. I mean, wow. That is... that is rich. I'll just put it that way. That is rich. All right. Our next matchup here, we have the New Orleans Saints against the Panthers. And keep in mind, Jameis Winston is playing with four fractures in his back.
That's reassuring.
I don't even know how the hell he's even playing with having to deal with these fractures. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like how can you even if you have extra padding on, how the hell can you be moving out there and taking hits with almost essentially a broken back? I mean,
a serious flak jacket on. But, yeah, he's obviously a target. If I'm a defensive end or a linebacker on that other team, yeah, call me whatever you want. But, you know, defensive coordinators are saying, hey, maybe check up on his ribs. They're hitting him in the back. I mean, I don't see how you last the whole year. Obviously, the Saints would not want to disclose that information. but it's out there.
Oh yeah, Jay Glazer was the one who put it out there.
Jay Glazer.
Yeah,
that guy's such a wannabe tough guy. I have a funny story. I interned for CBS way back in the day when I was 23, and Glazer was working for the NFL Today Show. It was Boomer. I was literally getting coffee, making about $2 a day.
Yeah.
Nothing. I was in shit. It was fun though. I was hanging out. Literally, I was one of the assistants for right out of college, for Boomer, Dion, and those guys, and Dan Marino. And Glazer was like, Glazer was the cockiest. He was the one person that no one wanted to be around. Everyone else was cool. Dion was really nice. Glazer walked around like he was part of the mafia. He like talks shit about. I can't stand that guy. Oh, he's a total. Never mind. It's a funny thing from the past. Jay Glazer. Yeah, he acted like he was Lou Gehrig walking around. This is 20 years ago. I couldn't imagine his ego now.
So sounds to me like he has this, like he still has this. He had a massive ego back then, and now it's probably monster sized because of the fact that he's one of the NFL's top reporters.
Yeah, I get a kick out of him, man. He's just a whatever.
Wow.
He also does the MMA thing, right? With Rogan and those guys are all weird. Dana White.
Yeah.
How's your steroids?
Yeah,
Glazer's like 5'4" and benches like 800 pounds. I don't think the guy played wiffle ball in middle school, but now he's like a supreme MMA commentator. Kind of funny how things change over the years. Glazer thinks he's like, the king of media.
Yeah,
he's plugged in there.
But anyways, though, the Saints. The Panthers are a dumpster fire, even with Baker Mayfield as their starter. So I would think the Saints are probably going to take this unless somehow Jameis Winston gets injured. If Kamara doesn't play, I know Kamara missed last week, but he's listed as questionable for this week. Taysom Hill is also questionable, so who knows if he may be out or if he'll play. But the Panthers are just a laughing stock at this point. They can't decide whether or not Baker should play or Sam Darnold should play. So, they have the Saints as 2.5-point favorites, and I have to agree. I think the Saints probably take this. What do you think, JB?
That's what I was going to say. I think the Saints are going to take it too. I think it'll be by more than three. I think it'll be like about 7, 8, or 9.
Yeah, I would be surprised if somehow this game is only separated by 3 points. I would be very surprised.
Yeah.
And now next up we have the surprising 1-1 Jacksonville Jaguars taking on the 1-1 LA Chargers. And something to keep of note here, it sounds like the Chargers will be without JC Jackson once again with his ankle injury. And they may be without their tight end Donald Parham as well as their center Corey Linsley, with hamstring and knee injuries. And not to mention, Justin Herbert is now is dealing with fractured ribs, and Keenan Allen is dealing with a hamstring issue. I would not be surprised if the Jaguars somehow pull off an upset this week.
100%. They're growing with confidence. Yeah. With second-year quarterback Trevor Lawrence, let's not forget, he was the man. He's a supremely talented player. Now you have Doug Peterson. I wouldn't call him a QB whisperer, but he does great things. Nick Foles. Doug Peterson's a good coach. They're starting over. They're wiping off that that bullshit, dealing with Urban Meyer. Jacksonville's got a young roster, a lot of high picks. They're a young, hungry team. I'm going Jacksonville.
What are your thoughts, Lou?
Between Jacksonville and the Chargers?
I'm going to go with the Chargers. Yeah. So what about you, JB?
I don't know. I'm just going by the line. I think it'll be a closer game than 7 points. I'd take Jacksonville and seven over the Chargers. I think it'll be a close game though.
And speaking of the Chargers, their team doctor is being sued by Tyrod Taylor, who had his lung punctured while he was receiving a pain-killing injection prior to week two of the 2020 season, which is what was responsible for Justin Herbert getting the start and thus therefore officially replacing Tyrod Taylor as the Chargers starter. And Taylor is seeking at least $5 million in this lawsuit, which is basically what he feels he was robbed out of in free agency. That he feels that if he was able to go through the whole season as a starter, he would have filed for free agency as a starter as opposed to being forced to file for free agency as a backup. And it says here that the Chargers team doctor, David S. Gazzaniga, and the Newport Orthopedic Institute, which he runs, are being sued for medical malpractice. The trial was originally going to be scheduled for November, but now it's been pushed into April due to the ongoing NFL season. And it's been stated as part of this lawsuit that his negligence, carelessness, and other tortious, unlawful, and wrong acts caused Taylor to lose position as the starting quarterback for the Chargers in the 2020 season. And something of note, Taylor did not return to the field for that season. He then became a free agent, joined the Houston Texans on a one-year deal as a backup or being paid backup money, and went 2-4 in six starts. And basically the lawsuit argues that the economic difference between a starting quarterback's salary and a backup quarterback salary is at least $5 million and is more likely much greater. The exact amount of such past and future loss, though, is currently unknown to Taylor at this time, and he will ask leave of this court for permission to amend this complaint, set forth the total amount when ascertained. So it sounds like he's seeking $5 million right now, but it sounds like that could potentially increase moving forward. And, I mean, being perfectly honest here, I think he has a case. Because if you're a team doctor, how do you put a painkilling injection and somehow hit the wrong place?
It's sick. There's also doctors out there that, you know, spinal cord injuries or leg injuries. I mean, doctors are human, right? Yeah, he has the right to sue. I'm saying it's unfortunate it happens. They're not robots. No one's perfect.
Yeah. No, obviously not. But
he has a right to sue. He's also the backup quarterback of the Giants now, so he's doing okay. But yeah, no, he can sue. They're gonna have to pay up. I mean, I agree with you. I agree with both sides. But, I mean, those surgeries, I mean, doctors talk about pressure. If they mess up at all, look what happens. They're trying to fix people, and it's a very high risk, very defensive, tough industry. That's for sure.
Yeah. Needless to say, I mean, this, and you know, I can tell you one thing, that if they probably had their old doctor, who was David Chow, who I actually follow on Twitter. He used to be the doctor for many years for the Chargers. And if he was still their doctor, this probably wouldn't have even happened. But for I forget why he left the Chargers, but for some reason the Chargers replaced him with this guy that ultimately ended up costing Tyrod Taylor his starting job. By the way, we do have some injury updates here. Safety Jordan Poyer is not expected to play against the Dolphins.
Right.
For Buffalo. So both of Buffalo's Pro Bowl safeties are out for tomorrow's game, along with two other defensive starters. Alvin Kamara for the Saints is expected to play after missing last week with his rib injury. The Cardinals running back James Conner is expected to play, but he will test out his ankle pregame before they play the Rams. But he is expected to play. The same goes for Jerry Jeudy of the Denver Broncos, who was listed as questionable with a rib and shoulder injury. He is currently on track to play against the 49ers, but he wants to see how it feels in pregame warmups. Also, Broncos cornerback Patrick Surtain, who was questionable with a shoulder injury, is expected to play, according to Adam Schefter. You know, speaking of injuries too, let's talk about Trey Lance. And Trey Lance having to be carted off from the field after he ran an option play and basically his legs completely rolled up under him. And from what it sounds like, I believe it is a broken leg that he's dealing with.
Oh, dear.
So he is out for pretty much the rest of the season. And here's the thing, is they invested so much in this guy to the point of where they were looking at potentially trading Garoppolo, and they gave up so much draft capital for this guy as well. And from what it sounds like, according to Trent Dilfer, this injury could be a career wrecker for Trey Lance. And I mean, you know, it's bad enough, and actually, it's a broken ankle, actually, not a broken leg. It's a broken that he suffered. Still bad, but yeah, it will officially end his season. Niners coach Kyle Shanahan has stated
it's a lot easier to heal a broken ankle than a broken leg.
Well, you know, it could be worse. You know, I mean, obviously, it's easier to heal something that's broken I'm thinking of a. Because there's different types of breaks. There's an open break there's a compound fracture, or there's a closed fracture, which I believe, if I recall correctly, they said it's much harder to heal a closed compound.
Right.
Where it's broken straight through.
A fracture.
But it isn't stated here exactly what type of a broken ankle he has here. But the fact is that, you know, he's out for the season. But there's some fear that this could actually destroy his career because of the fact that Trey Lance relies so much on movement.
Yeah, that could really really derail his career.
And I mean, RG3 even said that this injury pushes his development back at least 2 to 3 years.
Oh. 2 to 3 years.
And actually, there is a report from Pro Football Talk. He did avoid a compound fracture, so it wasn't a compound fracture of his ankle. But still, it says that it'll avoid potential complications that may happen during his recovery. So, I guess a compound fracture is actually worse than. But,
yeah.
You know, it's a good thing for the Niners, though, that they still have Jimmy Garoppolo, especially after they signed him to that team-friendly deal. And, I mean, we saw what happened last week. As soon as Garoppolo came in, the Niners played a hell of a lot better with Garoppolo than they ever did with Trey Lance.
I guess he's still got it, huh?
So,
now, Lance,
I wouldn't be surprised.
Get it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the Niners just decide to cut their losses with Lance and
do it now.
Decide to stick with Garoppolo, you know, for the foreseeable future, even past this season.
If you were if the 49ers were smart, they would go with Garoppolo. Forget Lance; he is a bust, a complete bust. Maybe I gave up on Garoppolo too soon.
I mean, you know, Alex, what are your thoughts on this? You know, would it be smarter for the Niners to, you know, stick long term with Garoppolo even past this season?
Yeah, I think so. He's more proven. He's more of a veteran. I mean, that was a reach. They took a gamble on Trey Lance. I hope he recovers. I hope he has a good career, but. Garoppolo is much more of a steady presence. I mean, he's proven he's respected in the locker room. You've seen it in baseball, basketball, hockey, when a team invests a lot in a high pick and moves up and risks a lot of picks and capital, they stay hitched to the guy. I didn't see anything that made me think Trey Lance is a Super Bowl quarterback. Garoppolo is the best chance they have. They should stick with Jimmy. That's my 2 cents.
Right. I mean, this is literally a guy who just took took the Niners to the Super Bowl, and almost had them going back to the Super Bowl last year.
Yes,
before they ended up losing in the NFC title game to the Rams. So, I mean, how do you have this quarterback who clearly is the better option, and you decide, nah, you know what? We're gonna invest in Trey Lance instead, even though he never really played for, you know, a reputable college. You know, it's not like he played in the SEC or he played for Clemson or something. He played for some college that never would even dream of being ranked in the top 25. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. And I mean, yeah, you know, Garoppolo is 30 years old. He still probably has a couple more years left.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of like the situation with Jordan Love and the the Green Bay Packers. You know, Aaron Rodgers has a couple of years left. Jordan Love is basically going to be the backup that entire time, and he was supposed to be the future for the Packers.
But things have changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you have a guy in Garoppolo who has almost led you to the Super Bowl twice.
Yes.
And yeah, when he's healthy, he's proven that he's a good quarterback.
Right.
Why do you not go with him the entire way? Until it's decided that he can't be your quarterback for some amount of time.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking on their part. That's for sure.
Another thing too is he had like two different injuries when he led them to the NFC title game last year.
Yes.
A 9-6 record last year in 15 starts, 20 touchdowns, 12 picks, plus he had another 3 rushing touchdowns as well. He threw for 3,810 yards. He had a completion percentage of 68.3%. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
No, but they gave up a lot. They got to hitch it all to that wagon. So
right.
I bet Shanahan doesn't believe in him right now. But ownership, GM, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, we got to give Trey a chance.
Yeah. Well, before we get cut off, better be going. So on that note, I'll say goodnight.
Yeah, this hour really flew by. Thank you guys for joining us tonight. Thank you to Lou, to Alex, to JB. A reminder, this upcoming Thursday night, we will have the Survivor 43 recap show. And of course, Friday night, we will have the finale for Big Brother 24. And of course, we'll be back next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. Everybody, have a good rest of your weekend, and we will see you guys next Saturday night.